Eastern Brownie. I am Marjorie Egan. You're listening to Boston Public Radio, 89.7 WGBH.
Hey there, Marjorie.
Hey.
Made it to another Friday. You know how many weeks this is?
No, I don't, Jim. How many weeks?
Neither do I. Now, in Grapevine, Texas, yesterday, more than 1,400 volunteer leaders in the Boy Scouts made history, saying no longer would Scouts who were gay be banned from membership. What they did not vote on, though, was whether to allow openly gay adult leaders. So our question is half a loaf better than no loaf? Actually, here's one guy, a leader of the opposition. His name is John Stemberger. He's an Eagle Scout, talking about why he's leaving the Scouts. He runs something called the group OnMyHonor.net.
We recognize on this day the most influential youth program in America has turned a very tragic corner. The vote today to allow open and avowed homosexuality in Boy Scouts will completely transform it into an unprincipled and risky proposition for parents.
So, again, I was asking the question to you guys at 877-301-8970. Is half a loaf better than no loaf? Obviously, Mr. Stemberg believes no loaf at all would have been a better outcome. Joining us to talk about this in studio is a woman who I work with at NECN who was in the building to tape Basic Black, which will air tonight at 7. Hello, LaToya Edwards.
Hello, Jim Browdy.
7:30.
My apologies. Is it 7 or 7:30?
It's 7:30.
Thank you. It was close enough. And on the phone, she is the publisher of Bay Windows and the South End News. Joining us is Sue O'Connell. Hey, Sue.
Hey, Sue.
Co-publisher.
Sorry. So I got everything wrong so far.
Oh, good.
I'm right next to my co-publisher, and he's going to say, okay, there you go again.
Okay, fine. My apology to you and LaToya.
I'd love to see Jim make the occasional mistake because they're so few and far between.
Occasional Marjorie.
Thank you, LaToya.
So, Sue O'Connell, is this half a loaf better than nothing, or? Where are you on this?
Yeah, I mean, it certainly is better than nothing, but it's also sort of the race not to be the last organization to let gays in. You know, it's like, how can we inch forward and not let history leave us behind inch by inch? But, it's definitely a victory. If we had to have a victory for adults or a victory for children, we'd rather have the victory for children.
Yeah.
As we've discussed a billion times. It's a generational issue. Interestingly, what happens if you're like 17 and three quarters and you're openly gay and then you turn 18, you just run back in the closet. it's an interesting kind of split the baby issue. But every year we move closer to just having folks be completely unplussed and unfazed by it.
But GLA, which of course is a national gay rights group, civil rights group, has said they're going to really press the leadership. And there's potential for lawsuits here. I can't imagine this is going to last much longer, the ban on the adult openly gay leaders or scouts.
No, and there are gays and lesbians who are, in fact, volunteering and working with the Boy Scouts. And, the sister organization, the Girl Scouts, which is incredibly open, affirming, and welcoming to everyone, is really a good model for the Boy Scouts to look at. The challenge, of course, is the Boy Scouts has this they're rooted in this religious viewpoint when, in fact, so many of the Boy Scout troops are in urban areas and are the lifelines to many communities. So I think, again, we're just inching along, and they don't want to be the last one.
Hey, I only have one more question for you, Sue O'Connell, who is the co-publisher of those particular places that I talked about a minute ago. Did they not vote on the adult leaders because the proponents of inclusion were worried they were going to lose the thing, or they thought that was even more divisive than the issue about scouts themselves?
Yeah, I don't know that answer, and I think it's really hard for a group that is supposed to be helping children to really exclude children, especially when they do so much good work. I mean, we don't want to miss the point here of how helpful they are to the development of kids, of boys into men. And, I think it would really be a terrible message to Boy Scouts if they were to turn people away based on what they say is sexual orientation or preference. You know, my co-publisher, Jeff Coakley, is afraid that this gives them the opportunity to try and talk kids out of being gay. I'm a little less worried about that because I know how rooted the urban groups are, Boston and New York, and how helpful they are. But it is something to think about.
Wait a minute. You mean if you get young men that are gay in the Boy Scouts, then the role would be to try to change their minds? Is that what you're talking about?
I think it would be very difficult for an evangelical troop leader who has an openly gay scout to not try and talk them out of what they would describe as the gay lifestyle.
Thank you very much, Sue O'Connell.
Sue O'Connell, thanks. Co-publisher of South End News and Bay Windows. Sue, great to talk to you. We appreciate you.
Thank you.
So LaToya Edwards, who happened to be in the building doing the Basic Black thing, which is at 7:30, not 7
tonight.
O'clock. I want to
be
clear. What's your take on this? I mean, you're a city kid. You're a Dorchester kid. Were the Boy Scouts a big deal when you were growing up?
You know, I have four brothers and four sisters, and my brothers never participated in the Boy Scouts.
Why not?
It just wasn't in the community. They didn't reach out to us. Me and my sisters, we went to a Girl Scout camp. I think I was a Brownies, but then after that, I didn't do the Girl Scouts. And I respect both organizations. When I look at this story today, though, Jim and Marjorie, I think about why the adult issue wasn't just tackled. We had 1,400 or 14,000 volunteers who looked at this. 60% of them voted in favor of this. It would have made sense to tackle the adult issue. And the real issue is this. Me and some people were talking about this. Children sometimes don't feel comfortable coming out and saying that they're gay.
Right.
And so it's easier, obviously. Kids who are, I mean, maybe it takes them to 17, as Sue was saying. So how often would you get an openly gay child? I'm not saying that there aren't children who are in touch with what they're feeling and know their orientation already. But so it's obviously an easier thing. And then I was looking at some articles.
So what are you saying? That they'll basically, if they decide that they're going to come out when they're 16 or 17, they might not come out because of their fear that they wouldn't be able to be an adult leader when they become 18 in the Boy Scouts? Is that where you're going?
No. Where I'm going is the fact that most kids don't talk about their sexuality at six, seven, eight.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Doing this, I mean, it's a great first step, but it's a cowardly first step.
Well, I assume the reason they didn't do it is what I suggested to Sue. I assume the proponents, people pushing this, the 60%ers, those who voted yes for inclusion of scouts themselves, thought they didn't have the vote. That's the only thing I can possibly imagine.
It was much more contentious because they were worried about gay men being troop leaders.
All the stereotypes.
Yes, the stereotypes, exactly, that are not true.
Our number is 877-301-8970. Is half a loaf better than no loaf? I think Sue O'Connell's position was, they should have gone the whole nine yards to use all these horrible images. But they didn't. It's at least a decent start. Obviously, people like the Stemberger is his name, suggest they shouldn't have done anything. And part of the problem, which we haven't discussed yet, is there's going to be a parallel organization here. So there's going to be great solicitation of kids who are straight or kids whose parents don't want them associating with gay kids to join this parallel organization, while the Boy Scouts is going to be this open, tolerant organization. Hopefully most parents decide they want their kid in the latter. 877-301-8970 is our phone number.
Well, I'm reading from our Facebook page. And by the way, you too can leave your comments on the BPR Facebook page at facebook.com/Boston Public Radio. Everybody is in agreement that the Scouts should go all the way and have openly gay leaders and openly gay Scouts with absolutely no problem. But most people think it's going to happen very, very soon.
Well, as Sue has said, it's generational. I mean, we've mentioned this before when it comes to gay marriage. The numbers, 18 to 29-year-olds, the most recent poll was at 80% or something of 18 to 29-year-olds. So ultimately, those who are growing up in a more tolerant culture where being gay is not that an atypical thing at all are going to get there, but it is a matter of time. It seems to me that if you've been somebody who's made a commitment to the Scouts, like so many adult leaders have, and you're gay, there's at least a certain bittersweetness out of
you. You guys are so hopeful, and that's great that you are, that the leadership will change as far as welcoming openly gay leaders. What I think will be is if you welcome in openly gay boys and the culture changes internally, and so maybe these boys then grow up and then the leadership changes, because it's hard to change people who are in power in the institution, even though we know that the three main leaders of the Boy Scouts organization, the lead paid executive as well as the two volunteer leaders who were at this, who led this initiative, they were the ones who pleaded to the membership overall to change this.
They were for the inclusion thing, yeah.
You know, becoming the big cliche about that it is generational, but you see even in Catholic churches where notoriously the leadership is very anti-gay, you see gay and lesbian groups in Catholic parishes all over the place. You see young evangelicals, and the evangelical church is very opposed, most of them, not all of them, but most of them, and you see these young evangelicals saying enough already with this kind of stuff. Black community, people can't see LaToya Edwards, you're an African American. The black community has been tough on engaged, but I think same thing is happening with young black kids. They're saying, you know, what is the big deal, mom and dad? So the Boy Scouts, as Sue said, they're going to be inching their way, and they could be the last people inching their way if they don't get their act together.
Do you find it interesting that she said that the Girl Scouts have never had an issue? It's like it was obviously...
Because I think lesbians are much more accepted in the community in general than gay men.
And have been.
And have been.
Okay, let's go to some calls. 877-301-8970. LaToya Edwards is with us for a couple of minutes from NECN. Dave, you're in Roslindale, and you're on with LaToya, Jim, and Marjorie. Hey, Dave. Hey, Dave.
LaToya, what I'm confused about is this, okay? Basically, with the Boy Scouts, we're talking about children. Although, you know, they do go up to the age of 17, as your producer said when I was talking to him. But here's the point. What exactly is openly gay? I mean, what exactly is openly gay in a child? I mean, if he doesn't manifest as a feminine male, then no one can tell he's gay unless he says he's gay. But if he says he's gay, what does that mean? Does he say, listen, I'm having sex with someone of the same
gender?
Yeah,
Dave, can I just stop you mid-sentence? The answer is, of course not. Maybe he's got a boyfriend. Maybe he's holding hands with a boy who is his boyfriend. You know, this whole notion that all of a sudden these people are dying to expose their sexual practices to their friends and fellow scouts is preposterous.
Okay.
The notion is you don't have to hide who you are. It is conceivable that no one's going to know that a particular kid is gay because it just doesn't come up. But at least he doesn't have to hide and worry that if anybody finds out that he's gay, that he's going to be expelled from the Boy Scouts. That's what it's about. It's
okay,
not
that's
about
a small point, Jim. But what about? I mean, previously a boy who was a bit effeminate. He got kicked out of the Boy Scouts without any admission that he was gay.
I missed the point.
No,
here.
What would happen here, Dave, is just what Jim just said. If someone found out somebody was gay, or there was any talk of his being gay. And he admitted he was gay. He got bounced.
Okay, so you're saying that just holding hands is something you see.
No,
you know,
Dave, you're micromanaging this. This is like saying they shouldn't repeal "Don't Ask, Don't Tell" in the military. What
Jim,
are all these gay people going to start having sex all over the place?
Jim, you're talking about adults there. We're talking about children here.
Dave, did you go to high? Dave, did you go to high school?
Yes.
Did you date when you were 15?
No.
Well, I think that's the problem, Dave. Thank you so much for the call. Oi, I mean, you know, it's just. Oy.
Well, he doesn't understand, Jim. He's thinking, I mean, what you're talking about is when you're in school and Marjorie and I were on the school bus and we're talking about, hey, I like that boy right there. Little kid, young people, when you're pre-adolescence, you start talking about boys and talking about your preference. And so that's maybe the point that Dave doesn't understand or is unclear about at this point.
Well, you know, Jimmy Tingle does this great routine, the great comedian from Cambridge about, I don't know if it's about gay marriage or gay civil rights or whatever. He says, you know, I was growing up when I didn't, I'm paraphrasing, obviously, and his is much funnier, when I didn't understand about people being gay and knowing so I had this feeling that if any of my friends were gay, they're going to be hiding in a bush. And when I walked by, they were going to jump out and say, I want to have sex with you. I mean, that's almost where Dave sounded like he was going. I mean, it's just basically not having to hide who you are is what this is all about. Nothing more, nothing less. Where do you want to go, Marjorie?
Let's go to Sarah from Pepperell. Hi, Sarah.
Hi, Sarah.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Pleasure.
My name is Sarah, and I live in Pepperell, Mass., which is a really small town. I am the lesbian mother of a six-year-old girl, and I am the troop leader of her Daisy Girl Scout troop. Mm.
And everybody's fine, or not?
You know what? That was a concern of mine when I started as the troop leader. I said to the Girl Scouts leadership, you know, I'm hesitant to step forward because I don't want kids in my troop to be excluded because their parents have a problem. Well, we got the list of the parents that wanted their kids to be in the troop before I told everybody at the very first meeting, this is my family structure. I don't hide it. I don't talk about it with all the kids because why would I? But I certainly don't hide it. And my daughter's in the troop and she has two moms. Everyone was fine with it. And, you know, and this is a really small town. We have cows.
So the moral of your story, Sarah, is there's a more hopeful tale here, is that people are growing more tolerant in great strides. Is that where you're going?
Well, it is, but it's all, you know, I think half a loaf is okay. And, you know, a lot of the parents in my troop have expressed to me their support of me as a lesbian troop leader and the Girl Scouts, have also expressed significant concern about the state of affairs in the Boy Scouts. And this is the way things are in my small town. I'm very invested in this issue, you know, being a lesbian. But I think that even with, you know, gay marriage, as you've seen it progress around the country, things happen in small steps.
Yeah.
You know, well, you know, but let me just say, Sarah, when you say small steps, we've talked actually with Sue in studio. If there has ever been a civil rights movement, which has proceeded in the last few years in huge steps, we're now at 12 states plus the District of Columbia that allow gay marriage. Admittedly, close to 30-something have constitutional bans on gay marriage. But the president changes position. Polls now show a majority of Americans support. I mean, it is really moving pretty rapidly, and I'm sort of proud of that. Yeah. Sarah, thank you for your call, and thanks so much for sharing your Girl Scout story with us. 877-301-8970. Was Barack Obama a Boy Scout?
I don't know. I mean, it's very hard to find troop leaders. I mean, that's a lot of work. You got to go
and
in.
And volunteering and all that stuff.
Yeah, you got to go
in
with 10 kids.
And
you got to do arts and crafts, and there's 10 kids running around. A friend of mine was my friend Donna. You know Donna. Yeah. She was a troop leader for Boy Scouts. And talk about mayhem. There'd be like 10 little boys. They were Cub Scouts, you know, wreaking havoc all over the house, and she's trying to organize. It's a lot of work.
But what we're talking about, it seems it's different for Girl Scouts versus Boy Scouts.
Totally.
And when I think about this, I'm looking at the article that we have, and it talks about how this mother from Pennsylvania has 5 sons. 3 of her kids are active in the Scouts. And she talks about how in the Boy Scouts. And she says that she's going to pull all of her kids out because it's about celebrating manliness and leadership. And we're looking to encourage our sons in traditional Christian values. We here in New England, maybe in Massachusetts, have a different view than other parts. She lives in Virginia. And I'm not saying, I don't know what the tone is there. But, you know, there are other different perspectives that we have to account for and take into account for. And so that's how she feels. And I think Sarah, the mother that we heard from, is obviously living a different reality than Allison.
Well, you know what? Also, she used the term manly. And that first caller, David, who aggravated me a little bit, and my apologies, David, if I was brusque with you, he kept using the term feminine. You know, these stereotypes of gay men and women, particularly of gay men, are so outdated. It's grotesque. In any case, Mary in Worcester, you're next on Boston Public Radio. LaToya Edwards is sitting in, and Jim Browdy and Marjorie Egan are always here. Hi, Mary.
Hi. I'm probably going to say some things that a lot of people aren't going to like.
Perfectly fine. Go right ahead.
But I would like to say that the thing that bothers me the most is I feel that the gays and lesbians are the most discriminatory and the most bigoted, and the only religion that's allowed to be practiced in the United States anymore is atheism. Anybody that wants to, you know, further their religious values is told that they have to accept what other people do. There's a difference between tolerance and acceptance. I agree that being gay doesn't make you a bad person, but it does mean that you're violating something that I believe God said is wrong. It's a test to them, and to be openly practicing it to me is like flouting what I believe in my faith, and I don't appreciate it. And if people have different groups, there's plenty of groups out there that accept gays and lesbians. And if people want to have a group themselves, why can't they? Why do the gays and lesbians have to get themselves in everywhere?
By the way, let's be clear. Mary, no one forced them. No court forced them to accept gay. You said, why can't the Boy Scouts have whatever they want? They decided themselves yesterday, 60% vote, that they wanted to include. I'm sorry.
They decided based on a law.
And they
changed their mind after they've in the past. I'm not saying that gays and lesbians are bad people. I'm saying that it's wrong of them to look at me as I'm some kind of weirdo because I'm Muslim when I don't look at them as weirdos. And they look at me as being all kinds of, you know, whatever, because I cover my head. But all that means is that I'm practicing what I believe in. And don't bother me. I'm not bothering you.
What about the children, though? That's the question. I hear exactly what you're saying. I respect what you're saying. But what about little kids and they're just learning to be respectful, learning to be heroes. They're learning all these important themes for life. They're not talking about sex, but they may know that they're attracted to one person over another. You are going to tell me that a child, a boy who's under, let's say 10 years old, who may like a boy rather than a girl, you're telling me that he doesn't deserve to be in the Boy Scouts?
No, what I'm going to say is that for my children, I don't want them to learn that it's perfectly acceptable to do those practices. I want them to learn that we believe it's not okay, and if people do that, that's up to them.
Hey, Mary, I've got bad news for you,
Mary. Suppose one of your kids is gay. Then what do you do?
Well, then that's an issue I'll have to deal with. Well, isn't it? But that's between me and them. It's not between me and the whole world, and I'm not forcing anybody else to accept or not accept it.
Well, by the way, Mary, let me be clear. No one is forcing you to accept it. You're entitled to your opinion. You've explained it well. But I think you're, with all due respect, a little naive to suggest that if you keep your kid out of the Boy Scouts and that exposure, that they're not going to be exposed to all this diversity, including sexual orientation, in the world at large. That's just where the world is going. But, Mary, thank you for calling and expressing your point of view. We appreciate it.
One quick thing about Mary, I think she said she was a Muslim. I don't know.
She did.
The Quran very well at all, but I do know the Bible pretty well. And I find it always ironic, especially when Catholics and Protestants talk about the biblical, oh, no, we can't have homosexuals. Well, St. Paul, who's the only one who mentions it in the New Testament, also says be nice to your slaves. Now, nobody's saying it's okay to have slaves in 2013. There were slaves back then. Leviticus is the Old Testament. Your version, Jim.
Thank you, my
version. The Old Testament. Jewish part of the Bible. Leviticus talks about people, that don't observe the Sabbath. They should be stoned and exiled and all these other things. So no one ever says, oh, you go shopping on Sunday, we should stone you and you're somehow not following your religion. So people pick and choose from the Bible what they want.
And it's also, the reality, we're talking about how fast all this stuff is moving. We had Jeffrey Toobin on the phone when we were talking about Anthony Lewis's passing. And we started talking about the DOMA and Proposition 8 debates, which he covered obviously before the Supreme Court. And I had read that morning that when Loving versus Virginia was decided by the Supreme Court, which says you can't ban interracial marriage, which I think was as recently as the 60s. Am I not right about that?
I think so.
71% of Americans, not people in Virginia, 71% of Americans opposed interracial marriage. So the reality is the train's leaving the station. It left the station on that. Obviously, it's leaving the station on gay marriage. And I also think, that Obama's so-called evolution has had a lot to do with sort of calming the passions on this thing. I think he deserves a lot of praise. Let's take one more if we can here. Kurt, you're in Raleigh. You're on with LaToya Edwards, Jim Browdy, and Marjorie Egan. Hey, Kurt.
Hi, how you doing?
Hey.
I just wanted to say that it's not a problem for gays and the Boy Scouts and probably not the Girl Scouts. What the problem is pedophiles.
Yeah.
And it's two different things.
Right.
If you're gay, that's one thing. But it's the pedophiles that you have to worry about.
Heterosexual or gay,
you're saying,
right?
I don't think we want pedophile troop leaders. I think we can.
That's right.
We don't.
That's exactly what I'm saying. It's not gays. It's pedophiles.
Yeah, but part of the problem that arose during the sex abuse crisis in the Catholic Church is there is a huge percentage of the population then, and sadly, I think still now, that associates pedophilia with homosexuality. I mean, and which is obviously flies in the face of reality and statistics. But you raise a good point, Kurt. Thank you so much for the call.
Pedophiles are supposedly straight.
I know that's exactly the point I think that Kurt was making and that I tried
women
to make.
Mm-hmm. It's always the men misbehaving. Haven't you noticed that, LaToya?
Well, in this case, my colleague, yes,
Thank
Jim Browdy.
Now, speaking of colleagues, before you depart, what are you talking about on Basic Black tonight?
Oh, we have such a juicy conversation.
What
Join
is
us
it?
At 7:30. It's all about President Barack Obama and his controversial speech to commitment speech to Morehouse, historically black college, where the creme de la creme of students come and succeed. And he talks about personal responsibility, and we take issue with that. And it's a heated, heated debate.
Meaning you're anti-personal responsibility. Is that correct?
I'm anti. No, that's your mantra, Jim.
Basic Black is a great show.
I absolutely
love it. Every Friday night.
See you at NECN this afternoon starting at 4. Great to see you.
I'll be dodging you when you come to work.
By. Thank you.
Okay. Casinos, racist tweets, and the grace of Tiger Woods is up next when we check in with Callie Crossley. Stay tuned for that conversation on 89.7 WGBH Boston Public Radio.
You're listening to Boston Public Radio. I am Jim Browdy. She is Marjorie Egan. We're joined, as we are every single Friday, by the host of Under the Radar with Callie Krolsey. That airs Sunday at 6:30, and she's over the radar with us every Friday afternoon. Hello there, Callie Krolsey.
Hello, Jim.
Hi, Callie.
I knew you liked that, but I had a feeling she'd like that.
Yes, I do. I'm corny.
So I read this story in preparation for talking to you today, and I thought, here we go. I knew this was going to happen sooner or later. The slot revenues are way down in Foxwoods and Mohegan Sun down in Connecticut. So what's their solution?
Well, their solution is to partner up with people coming into Massachusetts. I find this amazing.
Yeah.
So their revenues are way down and have been down for 16 months, according to this news story. And so now Foxwoods is partnering up to do a 1,300,000 square foot resort in Milford, which is about 15 miles from the Rhode Island border. And Mohegan Sun is partnered with Finnard Properties for an 800,300,000 square foot a property in Palmer in the western Massachusetts. Why? Because they want to get closer to those Massachusetts folks that they're afraid they'll lose more of when finally facilities are built here in the state.
I'm really worried about this, that we're going to have massive casinos and people aren't going to be gambling.
Who said that a year ago, Marjorie?
I think we both have said it.
I've been saying it for 100 years.
But it goes deeper than that. I mean, you have a situation where the slot revenues are down dramatically, as you mentioned, in Connecticut, which obviously is nearby. You add to the fact that we have the most successful lottery by far in the country, the most per capita dollars spent by far in Massachusetts on the lottery. Is that going to be hurt in some fashion? I mean, there's only a limited number of dollars. So this notion, you know what would have been perfect? Charlie Baker, this was his idea when he's running for governor. One casino, not three. I'm against them all in the state. But one casino, let's see how it goes.
And if put it way out somewhere.
I'm totally there. Yeah. And if it and not in a place where it's going to hurt local businesses. If it's a great success and creates all these jobs, then talk about number two and three. But if not, not.
Right, exactly. So now you got everybody in the world fighting over these spaces. And God knows, to Jim's point, how many people can do this? I mean, I don't gamble. I mean, not that I'm the person they're looking for. You know, I'd like the maybe some of the spa facilities, but
I would like the restaurants and the shopping and sort of the whole scene. We did go to one of those casinos down in Connecticut. I always get mixed up with Foxwoods or Mohegan Sun, with the waterfall when you come in the lobby and these really swank stores
right.
and restaurants.
But let's face it,
and the
and
shows.
We're not propping up the revenues there.
No, we are not.
Because so, that isn't where they make their money.
They make their money on the people who gamble.
You know, but one piece of good news for those in Massachusetts who are pro-casino, and I guess you're sort of agnostic, Marjorie, is that a fair...
Well, people wanted them. People voted for them. They voted for them
because they thought they were going to bring jobs.
Yes.
So my sense is if you're not making any money, somebody's losing jobs. And in fact, they did lay off at Mohegan Sun, you know, some time ago.
By the way, some communities are voting no. Some remember what happened in...
Gillette Stadium. Foxborough,
where the town leaders, who were pro, were voted out of office.
Right.
The very good news, though, for the pro-casino crowd in Massachusetts, when Maggie Hassan was elected as the new governor of New Hampshire, she was for the casino. It was fast-tracked, and it was just defeated in the legislature, which is shocking.
Which means
less taking away of revenue, and I assume that people like Steve Crosby, who's the chair of the Gaming Commission, are going to say and smile.
And she fought hard for that,
by the way.
Exactly.
Money is going to come down from New Hampshire as well, which I guess if you're pro-casino is a good thing. And by the way, to the credit of Deval Patrick, I think he's wrong on this, but what he has said is in furtherance of what both you have said, his thing is not just about the gambling. His is, he keeps saying destination casinos.
Right.
You want to go use the spa, you want to have a great meal for cheap. The only time I've ever been to one, I went to... what's the name of that place in California that is that has all these...
Lake Tahoe.
No, it's not Lake Tahoe. It's Reno. I went to Reno. Mm-hmm. It's Reno, Nevada. Mm-hmm. It literally was like a homeless shelter with casinos. I mean, one of the most depressing things I've ever seen. But I had some of the best meals I've ever had in my life.
Las Vegas.
Amount of money you'd spend at McDonald's.
Oh,
it is real.
Yeah.
Have you been in Las Vegas?
Many times. I was just in Las Vegas for a meeting not a few months ago. I ate my way through the city, but I never saw any of the casinos. I don't care.
Well, that's what I do. They're coming, take the best of
but
them.
But you have to go in the casino to get the cheap food,
well,
right?
Well, and Las Vegas is different because they have some inside and then some outside. So, you know, they've made get a whole, because now, you know, it's a whole family destination now. So you don't necessarily have to get the really good restaurants inside the casinos.
They're spectacular, you know, though, some of them, aren't they?
No, they're very expensive, but they're yummy.
Those Steve Wynn casinos, I've only seen them online, but like Bellagio, everything is floating.
I know,
it's like
it's
the chairs are floating, the tables are floating. It's one big pool reflecting glass.
That's as beautiful. Is your credit card when you're in there.
Exactly.
It's floating, too.
Hey, let's switch gears for a second. There have been a tad of racism has reared its head in public places, in the entertainment industry, in the sports world. Let's start in the entertainment industry. Mm. I only know Darius Rucker, I am embarrassed to say, when he was lead of Hootie and the Blowfish.
Right.
I don't even know. He's like the biggest black country singer since Charlie Pride.
Yes, exactly.
And what happened with him? Because I have to say, I miss this story.
Well, you know, somebody decided just to tweet. You know, he was, you know, there was some story about him, and they decided to tweet, you know, leave country to white folk. And so Darius wrote back, really? In 2013? This is what you have to say? And he said, you know, I have my membership in the Grand Ole Opry, and I'll take that and just keep walking. But wow, this is just so shocking to me. And by the way, you people or anybody like you are not going to listen to me anyway, so I don't care.
Why do you think he retweeted this? I mean, the other issue, just for those who missed it, is Sergio Garcia, who can't stand Tiger Woods, and apparently the feeling is mutual, had a little tiff during a tournament, and then at a press conference a little bit later, I think several days later, Sergio Garcia was asked, so are you going to have dinner with Tiger Woods at some tournament or something? He said, yeah, I'll invite him over for dinner every night and I'll serve fried chicken. He apologized the next day. Tiger says he was appalled and hurt and all that. That was public. There was no choice but to have that public. Mm-hmm. Why did Darius Rucker decide that because there's one racist dog who tweet? Why did he decide to retweet the thing?
First of all, I would say that that's been more than he's probably had more than that, you know, thrown at him, and so this was an opportunity for him to make a statement about all of it. A trust he has had some people commenting about it. I mean, people commented with great surprise when he first decided to go country. I mean, there was a lot of that, so you can be rest assured that other kinds of comments were out there too. So I thought he took that as, you know what, let me just respond to this one so you all know what's going on here, and that's fine. And the same thing actually with the Sergio thing. I mean, I just am just thinking to myself, are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? And by the way, that was a non-apology from Sergio.
Garcia's.
Yes. And let's...
One of those, if anyone was offended.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's essentially what he said. And let's know this, that he's saying that and worse in private company, which is his business, because this rolls off his tongue too easily when he has an opportunity to do this. I got to quote my girl Kelly Goff from The Root, which she gets right to what this issue is about, both with Darius Rucker and also with Sergio. She said, coded racial language has replaced the N-word, and in some ways that's more dangerous. She said, people know that using the N-word is considered offensive, but jokes about fried chicken leave just enough wiggle room for the person delivering said joke to claim, I'm not a racist, and in turn leave open the possibility that the person on the receiving end is both humorless and paranoid. So here's my advice to Garcia and others. The next time you have something to say to Tiger Woods or any other person of color with whom you have a problem, be man enough not to hide behind humor, but to tell them how you really feel. Use the N-word if you have to, and be man enough to suffer the consequences.
That's a pretty good
Kelly Goff, you know, Root. I think that is great.
We talk a lot, you know, about comments on the bottom of newspaper stories and how people are in the bottom of their basement. You know, anybody that thinks racism is dead in America, even here in Massachusetts, where we're supposedly so progressive, just read some of those comments having to do with any story involving someone black, whether it's an athlete or it's somebody that gets in trouble, whatever. I mean, it's unbelievable.
It is unbelievable.
It is unbelievable. So racism lives on in 2013.
Stepping back from racism for a second, is Darius Rucker any good as a country singer?
Yeah, he's very good.
Don't tell me you're a country fan.
No, I like singers. Well, you know what? I like bluegrass because I'm a Southern girl, and that's a kind of cross between blues and country. And so country is very close to that, and I like the lyrics and the stories. Listen, Carrie Underwood is daggone good.
I'm sorry. I can't even
look.
I think she's good.
So Darius Rucker is good too.
He's very good. He has an excellent voice.
Crying in their beer and the pickup truck.
I like the stories.
Come on. You don't like Jesus Take the Wheel?
His girlfriend backed the truck over her brother and all that sort of stuff.
I love those. Because they reflect your life. You know, you listen to those stories, it's like watching reality TV.
Is there a happy country song?
You don't want happy country songs. You want miserable.
Right. It's kind of, it's the flip side of blues.
Exactly.
It's the other side of blues.
So you feel better.
On the under the radar side, one of the stories you're dealing with on Sunday, I think, is a great, great. So this is on the Cape, where Marjorie spends a lot of her time. A great sort of conflict between the right to know and sort of protecting your community. Well, tell us the story. I love this.
This is amazing. So the Yarmouth police have embraced social media, and they're tweeting and Facebooking and press releasing and keeping their community up to date, up to the minute about what's going on with crime, you know, whether they arrest somebody, whether they, you know, what is, so that people are alerted to what's happening. Well, they're doing too much of a good job as far as some of the businessmen are concerned, because they think that it makes Yarmouth look like a crime-ridden city, and since tourism is the really heart.
Drug overdoses in town during a three-week period is one
amazing?
Of the things.
Yeah,
but go ahead, I'm sorry.
So they, you know, so they think that people are going to think Yarmouth, crime. I'm not coming here if I'm a tourist. So now they're in a committee. They put together a committee to go see if they can put together a policy to determine how and how much they will tweet, which some in the community are saying, wait a minute, you know, we want to know what's going on. And if that's what's going on, I would think that people would say, hey, I'd rather know and know that I'm being safe and protected by the police who are on top of it.
You know what I love about this story is we as Americans are so informationally schizophrenic. I mean, I'm thinking as you're talking, Barack Obama doesn't tell us enough about what he's doing with national security. The law enforcement agencies in Waltham and Boston aren't telling us enough about Tsarnaev before, but the law enforcement in Yarmouth is telling us too much, all of which is factual, by the way. I mean, nothing they're saying that is not true, and it's not like they're putting in lights on 6A or whatever goes through Yarmouth. There have been all these crimes. They're basically saying we have the information, we want to do full disclosure.
Right.
So where do you end up? Where do you come down on this?
I actually think it's a good thing for them to do it. They got 400,000 subscribers on Facebook. That's pretty
400,000?
Amazing. 400,000 on Facebook.
And the Cape in the wintertime is a totally different place.
Yes.
I mean, there's a lot of poverty, a lot of alcohol abuse, a lot of drug abuse, a lot of unemployment. So I think you have to be allow people to know what's going on in their neighborhood. And I don't think it's going to stop anybody from coming to Yarmouth and staying in a nice hotel on Route 6 or anything.
Do they have any evidence that it has stopped anybody?
No, but there's, I think they're just worried. I think businessmen are worried that, you know, because this hadn't happened before. So this is the first, like, full-on sort of whole embrace information campaign in which they're using both the traditional press releases but also the social media, which goes out instantly. But I got to say, I think Yarmouth is such a strong brand. I mean,
me too.
I don't hang around in Yarmouth, but my when I think about it, I think of cute little cottages and ice cream and fried clams. And maybe I'm wrong, but that's what comes to
when
mind.
When I think Yarmouth, I think drug overdoses. That's
You do not.
No, I am totally with you.
I
agree. And you can't have it both ways. If you're for full disclosure, if you want government to be telling you what's going on, then you want government to you can't have it both. You can't have it both
ways.
I
plan on spending my dotage in Cape Cod. I'm going to have police radios right in my living room so I can monitor what's
going
on.
How close are you to Yarmouth?
10 minutes.
Oh, so
are you really?
Yeah. Yarmouth is the next town over from
Senegal.
So had
you ever thought of it, you know, any other way than as I described it?
Well, my sister was already down there with the police radio. She's monitoring the crime situation. She always talks about this. That it is in the wintertime, it's a pretty poor community. And
Well, they're not worried, though, as you say, about the winter. They're worried about
summer
tourism.
Yeah.
Right. But I think you can't tell people that live there year-round, we're not going to let you know what's going on in your own town because we're worried about the tourists not coming down. And I think you're absolutely right. That whole I said Route 6 before. I meant 6A. Mm-hmm. The whole gorgeous little route that goes right down from Hyannis all the way down to Provincetown. All those adorable little restaurants and shops on
that's my
Route 6A
feeling
in Yarmouth. Yeah, I don't think they have anything to worry about.
I don't. You know, I'll probably visit at some point because I'm usually heading down there, heading toward the vineyard, as you know. But, you know, so I don't stop on the Cape. But I think it's beautiful.
You don't.
Thank God there's no crime on the vineyard. We don't have to worry about that.
What can I say?
Well, the vineyard in the wintertime,
yes,
I think,
is same thing.
Same thing.
You got the drug issues and and the poverty. And
people
have two and three jobs. In fact, our own Sean Corcoran won a DuPont several years ago in doing 30 days about poverty on the vineyard.
Really?
Yeah, it was really
I spent a year, as you know, I lived the year when I was in law school in Provincetown. And people assume Provincetown is always the 100,000 people on Commercial Street buying stuff, going to restaurants. You know, shortly after Labor Day, the town clears out.
Right.
You have the fishermen, the townies, the fishermen who can't fish in the winter, at least for the most part. You have a couple of store owners sticking around. But there's a lot of poverty in a lot of those places that are huge tourist attractions when everybody disappears.
Well,
why are you smiling?
One of the things about the Cape Cod Times, and it isn't funny.
It's a good paper.
It is a good paper. But
I'll be having the editor on the show.
Well, ask them about this. I don't know if they still list them, but they would list the AA meetings, smoking, non-smoking, under 18, over 18, Al-Anon, smoking. Yeah. They would have like a whole page of ads of all the different
support groups.
Yeah, and it was huge, a huge list.
And by the way, there are people that come to vacation who are attending those meetings, let me just say.
Exactly.
And so they want to make sure that people know that. I think the only truism is about Wellfleet, because I always say if you throw a stone, you know, you can down there, you can hit both your shrink and somebody who can take care of you.
Tell me about it.
Just start yelling.
Tell me
about
it.
I need help in both ways.
And when you're in the restaurant and your shrink is sitting at the next table, you are undecided. Do I say hello to the person and acknowledge and then explain how I know that person? Or do you just keep your eyes down and sort of wink and say...
Did you ever see that movie, you know, the one where the guy... oh, my God, I'm blanking on it right
now. What's the matter with
Bob? Yes.
Oh,
excuse me. Favorite movie.
It's one of my This is Richard Dreyfuss is a shrink. And what's his name? Bill Murray.
Bill Murray.
Plays the patient who falls in love with the shrink and follows the shrink down to wherever his vacation home. Marjorie doesn't think it's as funny as I do, but you obviously do.
Hilarious.
One of the funniest movies of all time. Remember the name of the book that he wrote?
No.
Baby Steps. That was the name. Richard Dreyfuss writes this book, Baby Steps, and he's about to become a huge national celebrity. He's going to be on the Today Show. And then Bill Murray, who's in love with the shrink, is glued to him, essentially.
It's one of the
follows on vacation.
No, I once interviewed a very prominent Yale researcher, and he said, told me he was going on vacation, so we had to finish the interview, and I said, where are you going? He told me, you know, the vineyard. I said, have you ever seen What About Bob? He said, please, I am What About Bob. This is what happens when I'm there. People, leave me alone.
I am totally there. So are you going to tell us anything else about Sunday Show, or is that all we're getting?
No, that's all you're getting, but I got some other really great stuff, I have to say.
Terrific.
From Rhode Island and from New Hampshire.
Okay. Under the Radar is Sunday nights with Kelly Crossley at 6:30.
Afterwards, are you going to the Vineyard for the Memorial Day weekend?
I am.
La di da. Okay.
How'd you know?
Kelly Crossley is the host of Under the Radar. You can see Kelly Crossley Under the Radar every Sunday night at 6:30 right here on 89.7 WGBH. So, the promise of a 3-day weekend, is it arousing your supreme enthusiasm and lust for a permanent 4-day work week? Well, it's rousing Jim Browdy. We're going to talk about that up next on Boston Public Radio.
Happy Memorial Day.
Thanks, Kelly.
The WGBH Spring Auction is still rolling along.
And with Father's Day approaching, it's a great way to pick up some great deals on gifts Dad is sure to love.
Like a Tivoli Audio Network's Global Audio System.
Tickets to catch the New England Revolution.
Sports memorabilia.
A week-long stay at an actual horse ranch in Montana.
And much, much more.
And every winning bid supports public broadcasting.
It's all happening online at auction.wgbh.org.
WGBH programs exist because of you. And Boston Private Bank, committed to providing a personalized approach to banking and investing. Boston Private Bank. This is your time. This is your private bank. More information available at bostonprivatebank.com. And Patricia Baker, real estate specialist at Keller Williams Realty, partnering with and educating home sellers and buyers in the greater Boston area, helping them make informed real estate decisions. PatriciaSellsHomes.com.
This is Jim Browdy. She is Marjorie Egan. We're on Boston Public Radio, and I am excited. Now, Marjorie, here's a quiz for you.
Yes, Jim.
Sort of anticipation of our Friday news quiz at the bottom of the 1 o'clock hour. What is next week, Marjorie Egan?
Next week is a Memorial Day.
Exactly. But what else is next week, Marjorie?
I know.
Yes, you do. What is it?
It's a 4-day work week.
Exactly. A 4-day work week, which caused us to ask you the important question, shouldn't all of non-essential America move to a 4-day work week? You know, would you not love to be able to say TGIT? Do you know what that stands for, Marjorie?
Thank God it's Thursday.
Exactly. I mean, think about, we have, and this is a true story, we have been talking in the newsroom, and we love our jobs here. How many days or weeks have we been talking about the fact that we have a 3-day weekend? Has it been 3 weeks since we said, hey, Memorial Day weekend's a 3-day? How much joy does it create for people? And we want to know at 877-301-8970, would you support a movement to change most of America to a four-day work week. Now, obviously, you can't do it in every industry, but you can do it in most. Would you work 10 hours a day? Probably, yeah. You'd probably do the same number of total hours, but you know that when Thursday is over, or whatever day you ended up taking off, you have that three-day weekend coming up. All the studies that I've seen, Marjorie, show that productivity is greater because the excitement level is greater. Good for mental health. You can take care of lots of things on that Friday so it doesn't ruin your Saturday and Sunday. And most employers, I've done a lot of reading on this through the years, most employers, with a couple of exceptions, say that the overall pluses far outweighed the minuses. So the obvious question is, other than our stubbornness as a society, why haven't we moved to a four-day work week?
I don't know. It would be good for the environment, too, because you'd have people either working Monday through Thursday or people working Tuesday through Friday. So you'd have less traffic on Monday, less traffic on Friday. I think it'd be great. I don't know why it hasn't happened.
And by the way, for those who are saying who are small businesses, are going to call us at 877-301-8970. Obviously, if you're a one- or two-person operation, unfortunately, you're going to have a problem here. If you have enough employees, then you do some shifting kind of thing. One person has Friday off, one person has Thursday off, one, whatever it is. But essentially, so you craft it and say, oh, I'm sorry, Friday or Monday, my apologies, so that you end up with a three-day weekend. I'm telling you, it would change the culture, change the mental health status of America. It's this, I think it's this, other than making college affordable, which is my other obsession, this is the single move that could change the society in ways that we've never even dreamed of. It is huge.
Well, you do notice, because I used to work Tuesdays through, I used to have Mondays off. And you notice if you have Mondays off, everybody else is working. So all the stuff you can get done, like going shopping, going to the dry cleaners, nothing is crowded. And you feel like you have that day, even though I was working a five-day week, you have that day to kind of get things organized and cook ahead and all that sort of stuff. I mean, it makes a big difference. But I think there are certain professions. You know, I always thought, I'm not a very courageous person and I would never run into a burning building, but firefighters, I love their schedule. They work those two 24-hour shifts and they have the rest of the time off to kind of recoup, and they hang out at the firehouse and they're all cooking together and barbecuing together and stuff, except for the fact that you have to actually fight a fire. It'd be a lovely schedule. You know what I mean?
I know exactly what you mean. 877-301-8970. What do you think about a four-day work week? There are a lot of examples in industry where they've done this. By the way, in Utah, what was the name of the governor of Utah who ran for president a couple of years ago? Republican. Do you remember his name?
Udall.
John Huntsman, exactly.
John Huntsman, thank
we
you.
We were interviewing John Huntsman
Udall,
during the presidential
myself.
Campaign in New Hampshire. I think we were doing this for our former radio station. And in the middle of the interview, I said, Governor Huntsman, I'm not going to tell you what my position on your candidacy is, but I'm going to tell you one thing you did, which I am in total support of, is you were the governor who changed most of the public employees in Utah to a four-day work week and really made history. You know what his response was? He was no longer the governor, obviously, when he was running for president. That day was the day that the Utah legislature repealed the four-day work week in Utah after years. And by the way, I did a lot of reading about it afterwards. I have no idea why, because almost all the employees were happy. The consumers, meaning the taxpayers of Utah, virtually no one was complaining. They weren't getting a full breadth of services. And by the way, for those who say, well, I need to be able to go to the dry cleaner, then you change your expectations. Whatever you do, you got to do on days that they're going to be open. It is doable logistically. And I'm telling you, I know I'm hyperbolic when it comes to some things. Not this. It would change everybody's life for the
better. The other thing is you'd miss all your kids' sporting events.
What do you mean?
Well, you can kind of sneak out to go see your kid play soccer or play basketball. If you're a five-day work week, you can take off for 2 hours. If you have a four-day work week, you're going to be there for like 10 hours or 11 hours. That's it. You miss them all.
Yeah. You know what my answer to that is?
What?
Video them. 877-301-8970.
It's not the same, Jim.
Let's start in Framingham. Michael's on the phone with Jim and Marjorie. We're talking about the four-day work week. Hey, Michael.
Good day, Jim and Marjorie. How are you?
Excellent. Thanks for the call.
Of course, I'm unfortunately reflecting back about 15 years ago, but I ran a company that had about 190 electricians.
Uh-huh.
And we wanted to increase our ability to have manpower available for projects coming up without taking on full-time people. So we worked into a deal with the guys that we were going to say, we're going to work 10-hour days because productivity actually does show it looks better. And one group started Monday and worked through Thursday. The other group started Tuesday and worked through Friday. And if either one of them worked Monday or Friday, it was overtime for them. It gave us some reserve power in case we got a project that came in and we had to move on it. Now, that was great and we started in the summer, and everybody loved it. The problem was, is once summer ended and work started picking up and we ended up needing them 5 days a week, they basically said, we're not available.
Because they've gotten used to and loved the new schedule, right?
So we canceled it. We ended up terminating
it.
So how much did your employees hate you, Michael?
I don't know, but we ended up firing them all eventually.
Oh, well, that's a great... Listen to the laugh of Michael from... So, Michael, despite your experience, I mean, where do you come out? I mean, obviously...
I believe, honestly, it depends on the industry. The companies in today's world need to provide 24-hour-a-day everything. But that doesn't mean that the employees, if they don't, you know, they can structure them. I think the structure we had was great.
You stagger
basically,
things.
Everybody had a four-day work week. They come to work at 7, get off at 5, go home.
I love it.
And every Friday or every Monday was off, and they could take care of whatever their other business was. And, you know, when a person goes to work at 7 in the morning, you're not actually getting productivity out of them until 7:30, 8 o'clock, and they get rolling. And if you're wrapping up at 3 o'clock and going home, I mean, you end up with about 5 hours of great productivity. The rest is in between. If they work a 10-hour work day, you get about 8 hours of productivity and 2 hours of startup and shutdown.
That's a great point.
The business owner wins.
Michael, thank you so much for the call. Let me read you this excerpt. I think it's from the New York Times a year ago, and my apologies if I pulled it from the wrong place. At 37 Signals, a software firm, employees work a 32-hour, not a 40-hour, four-day work week, May through October, obviously because of nice weather. Its CEO claims that he's seen an increase in productivity. Listen to this quote, and it makes total sense to me. It is from the New York Times. When there's less time to work, you waste less time. When you have a compressed work week, you tend to focus on what's important. Makes total sense.
But
to
you
me.
Know what, though? I mean, this would work if you were a union employee and you had strict hours. I mean, don't you find that most people that are non-union employees now, what do they complain about? They're working 10-hour days, 5 days a week. Who do you know that really works a 40-hour
week
job?
It's not just, by the way, virtually nobody's unionized anymore. So, I mean, the private sector is like 12 or 13%, so the vast majority of people aren't unions. A greater number are in unions in the public sector, but essentially unionization of America.
Well, people that have an expectation then. I mean, most of my friends are all complaining about having to work extra, longer hours, and everybody's afraid to buck the boss because they're worried about getting laid off.
Yeah,
they're worried
I'm
about getting fired.
I think the emotion is real. In terms of the hours, go to a subway stop at a little bit after 5 o'clock and you can get trampled. I mean, the reality is most people are working 8-hour days. And, you know, like the guy said a minute ago, the guy that ran the business who ultimately ended up firing his 190 people. It's not going to work in every industry. It's not going to work in every workplace. I would say the vast majority of workplaces and industries could accommodate this. And there'd be, how would you feel about your employer? That's another thing, by the way, in terms of productivity and happiness. If you worked at a 5-day week place and your employer said next week, by the way, you can start working 4 days, 10 hours a day. Are you not going to feel great about the place and great about him or her, the guy or woman who's running the place? Of course you are.
Well, it depends what industry you're in, Jim. I might be concerned about who's filling in for me while I'm taking my fifth day off here.
But you keep having that. But if everybody's doing a four-day work week, then there's nothing. If everybody's treated equally, then you don't have to have those kind of fears. Let's go to Needham, where Ken is on the phone. Ken is next on Boston Public Radio. Hey, Ken.
Hey, how you doing?
Great.
I'm an employment lawyer, and I'm familiar with a lot of the wage and hour issues, in, not just in Massachusetts, but across the country.
Uh-huh.
And it's very, very common to have, in a lot of industries and a lot of fields, to have work weeks that are 9 hours a day for 8 days, for 5 days during a week, then the following week, enough hours to make it up to 80 over 2 weeks, and you get a Friday off. It's a 9-80 work schedule.
Say it's very common?
It's not universal, obviously, but it's very common in California, for example, where you get overtime if you work more than 8 hours a day. They have a statute which provides that if you work a 9-80 work week, which is 9 hours, 5 days, and then 9-9-9-8 the next week, end up working 80 hours, you don't get overtime, and you have to register with the state agency. There's thousands of work units that are registered for that kind of a schedule.
So essentially, every second week, you get a 4-day work week.
Right. And you're always working, one extra hour, and, you know, it's sort of a compromise, but I mean, it can be a 10, you know, 4 tens or 5 nines. And
we got it. But Ken, since you're in the business, what are employers saying? Are they embracing this? Have they had good results?
Yeah,
how's the productivity?
It's usually the employers who recommend it. Again, with California, where it has to be done by registered with the state, there has to be a vote. And if the majority of the people in the work group don't want to do that, then it doesn't happen. But most of the time, if an employer proposes it, people are happy to do it.
Ken, thanks for adding that to the discussion. Sure. And keep in mind, from the perspective of the employer, there are another couple of things. One, it reduces energy costs. If they're closed, in the case of Ken, 1 out of 10 days or 1 out of 5 days. Also, you don't have to worry about your employee, if he or she works normal hours, getting stuck in rush hour traffic. If you're working a 9 or 10 hour day like Ken described, you're traveling slightly on off hours. So that's a plus. I mean, there are pluses all around, as long as you acknowledge that it doesn't work in every single industry. 877-301-897. Not only have Marjorie and I been smiling for 3 weeks about having a three-day work weekend.
By the way, I'm working on Monday.
You
not,
are?
Not
what,
here.
For the Herald?
The Herald, yes, I am.
Well,
the last one of the problems with newspapers
so why are you
365
smiling?
Days a year.
You know what I'm doing Monday?
What are you doing, Jim?
Nothing. That is what I'm doing. But, you know,
maybe you're binge TV watching.
I'm even smiling talking about it because the expectation is so great. And, you know, it's interesting. Why isn't government, just like Utah, why isn't government? We should ask Deval Patrick when he's here next month, when he's here in June. Has he ever thought about it in a state government setting? Let's go to Dale in Boston.
Well, I think the joke in Massachusetts is that people are left for Memorial Day weekend Wednesday.
Well, you know, the worst joke, I've said this on the air before, the oldest state house political joke ever. What does the state rep say when he leaves work on Wednesday? What does he say?
Have a nice weekend.
I know. It's fairly funny, but it's a little old. Dale, you're in Boston. You're on with Jim Browdy and Marjorie Egan. We're talking about the possibility of a four-day work week in our future. Hi, Dale.
Hi, guys. How are you?
Excellent.
Fine, thanks
for the call.
That's great. Well, I think it's a wonderful idea. When I did work, I thought it was great to be able to have three-day weekends. However, I wasn't in that schedule. I basically worked 12 hours, 5-6 days a week. Now I'm a stay-home parent, and I think you guys should take it one step further. All of our kids that go to schools, mine are in Boston Public Schools, they leave for school 6:15 to get to school by 7:20, start 7:30, get out between 1:40, 2:15. Their day is shot anyway. Why not keep them in school the extra few hours, continue their learning, and then give them a Friday, Saturday, Sunday, or a Saturday, Sunday, Monday? All of their sporting activities, anything they need to do, any extra projects can all be done during those 3 days. I just think it would make far more sense. This is a crazy schedule that we live on.
But by the way, Dale, the only way you could do that with schools, and I hadn't thought about that, is if at the same time you were doing it at workplaces, because otherwise the little kid is going to be wandering
the streets of
wherever on Fridays.
Well, I totally agree. It has to come from workplaces, but also bring it down into teaching. Bring it down to depth. Look at our nurses. Our nurses already work, you know, 12-hour shifts, 2-3
yeah,
days a
that's
week,
true.
And then they have 4 days off.
Yeah.
You take flight attendants. You take pilots. I mean, it's out there in the industry because they have to be governed only because they can only get so many hours in and then they have to have so many days of rest. Why do you know, look at, I was non-union. I was a salaried employee. I worked in the shopping center industry, and they expected me to work 6-7, sometimes, you know, 7 days straight in a row, 12 hours a day.
Oh,
damn,
that's
what the industry
awful.
Demanded.
Awful.
So it is awful, but I'm just saying I think that, you know, we could be able to make it work for everybody all the way around, and I think your idea is wonderful, and I don't know why people don't do it.
Well, we're going to start broaching it with public officials and would-be public officials when they come in and corporate leaders and see if we're way off base. But that was a great call, Dale. Thank you so
kids
much.
Should be in school
thank you, guys. Love your show. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Dale. Kids should be in school till 5 o'clock
well,
or 6
but,
o'clock.
Well, but that's apart from a four-day work week. You and I both believe in a longer school day. Do we
I
not?
Do believe in a longer school
And all the
school
evidence
day,
suggests.
Especially in the city.
What's the name of the Gabrielli's group, Mass 2020? I mean, where they have some experiments in a bunch of schools, and I think Deval Patrick saw it and received some money that adds to that. All the experiments show it's better for the learning experience, not to mention what's the highest crime period of the day for teens?
Afternoons
when they're on the loose. 877-301-8970. See, you're a nattering nabob of negativism. You don't think this can work, even though you'd like it to happen. I think it can work. You just put your brains to it. There should be a four-day work movement in this country led by some prominent and appreciated public official.
Let's go to Lori in Natick. What do you think, Lori?
Hi, Marjorie and Jim.
Hey,
I just
Lord.
Want to say that even if we don't go to a four-day week, I think we should have summer Fridays. And I also think that the days between Christmas and New Year's should definitely be a holiday.
You are right.
Nobody ever works during that time. There's nothing that ever gets done. And it would just boost morale so much to know that you had that time off.
Lori, can I tell you something? We will, if you stay with us through the rest of the year, Marjorie and I always do a show, sometime usually about mid-December, making that exact point that there has never been one, other than in retail stores, there has never been one drop of work done in an office between December 25th and January 1st, and the absurdity of having to go to work and go through the motions. It's insane. So we'll advance.
My sister works in the computer industry in Silicon Valley, and many companies shut down during that time, and I don't know why it's not done universally.
It's a great idea,
well,
Lori. Thanks.
You do hear a lot about companies around here. I mean, I do know people that work for places that shut down completely Christmas week. They just because...
Why don't any? Other than, unless you're a business that's... Well, actually, I said retail. They're not. All they're doing is returning things. Return them on January 2nd. Retail establishments could go to a limited schedule, too. Who, other than hospitals and emergency types, you know, cops, firefighters, who couldn't shut down on Christmas?
I'd be bummed out if the restaurants all closed on Christmas week.
Well, we got to keep them. Sorry, you guys have to work. 877-301-8970.
Or the movie theaters.
Do you notice that? I mean, almost everybody's excited about this thing. Do you agree?
Even though it's some great people, to have a three-day weekend.
Yeah. And there's no reason. There's no reason not to do it.
I mean, what we've done is we've moved all the holidays around. So
to get them. That's why they're Monday holidays, right?
Except for July 4th. I think July 4th, Christmas. The only ones?
Yeah.
Everything else has been moved, correct?
We have to move both of those babies, too. Let's go to Erica in Providence, Rhode Island. Jim Browdy and Marjorie Egan on Boston Public Radio. Hey, Erica.
Hey, Erica.
Hi, guys. How are you?
Excellent.
I just want to comment that I actually work, I work for the federal government. In my office, we have a lot of options on our schedule. We have the option to work a regular five-day work week. We have the option to work four 10-hour days. We have the option to work what they call a 5-4-9. So you work 9-hour days and you get every other week, you get a 3-day weekend.
That's like that labor lawyer said for that about California. Wait a second, Erica, before you continue, go back for a second. The vast majority of federal employees have an option of work. Oh, just certain federal employees.
I think it's an agency by agency policy.
I see. Okay.
So I'm not sure how it works in other agencies. I know that that's the case in my.
And how many? What percentage of the people choose the 4-day, 10-hour-a-day work week?
I think the majority of the people do the 5-4-9. So they do the 9-hour days and they do every other.
And how's that working out in terms of service and happiness and productivity and all that sort of stuff?
I think it works out very well because. And I think it depends on the job. Certain people, if their job is one where they have to really interface with the public all the time, then maybe that's not an option for them. But I think the majority of us, you know, in this day and age, the majority of us produce basically intellectual capital.
Mm-hmm.
So it doesn't really matter if we're doing that from 9 to 5 or from 10 to 6. Or honestly, I probably do a lot of my work at night in my head, just thinking about problem solving and how to approach, you know, something that I'm working on.
So what did you choose? Which option did you choose? That 9-day deal? Which option did you choose?
I'm currently actually working a 5-day work week because I have a long commute I commute to Boston. But I have in the past done, I've done the 5-4-9 before.
But wait a second. If you have a long commute, it seems to me you're exactly the person who would want to go to work only 4 days and not want to commute at rush hour. So why aren't you doing the 4-day deal?
That's true. I have a small child at home, so if I do a 10-hour day, I'll never see her.
I got her. Well, that's obviously.
Yeah,
that's
I think that's one of the things I was thinking about, too, the longer work day. If you do have little kids, then you feel even more guilty than you already do.
But I think it's wonderful to work at a place where that option is available because people live in different places. Their family situations are different. And I think it creates for very good morale, especially considering that, to be honest, morale amongst federal employees is a little low right now.
Erica, thank you.
Do you work for the IRS, Erica?
I do not work for the IRS.
Oh, okay. Listen to that laugh. Erica, thank you.
That's
for
good.
You know what my worry is if we went to a 4-day work week?
What?
What if people didn't miss us? That's only when you do. Let's go to Ben in.
Tell you, the person that's filling in for you Friday, Jim.
I know.
You're better than you.
You better watch out.
And then you don't have to worry about working any days
whenever
a week.
You take a day off in the entertainment industry
That's
or
right.
the news industry or things like that, you hope the person is good, but not too good. Ben, you're in Connecticut. You are next on Boston Public Radio with Jim and Marjorie.
Oh, hey. How you doing?
Great. What's going on with you?
Oh, I currently work a 4-day, 10-hour work week.
What kind of – what do you do or what kind of industry? What do you do?
I work in the biomedical plastics industry. I make medical tubing for hospitals. And
okay.
Such.
How's that working out?
Yeah, it's working out fine for so far. No, it's been great. A lot of room for advancement.
Yeah.
I've been bumped up. I'm a technician now.
Uh-huh.
And that's like, you know, starting from taking stuff off a line. So, but,
so what do you
anyway,
do? What do you do with your extra day? I mean, do you go on little trips?
Well,
do you like do your laundry?
I called in earlier and I just didn't get through because, you know, Connecticut can't drive on your cell phone.
Good.
I got to work. I'm actually about to go in for some overtime right now. Just because, I mean, you know, you work 4 hours, you get your 40 hours. You need the extra money, and they have something going on Friday. It's totally worth it. Just go in, and other than that, the off-hour driving is great. I mean, I guess where I live, it's not too much traffic.
Yeah,
anyway.
But the off-hour, I mentioned that a few minutes ago. The off-hour driving is a huge deal. I mean, not only is it an environmental thing, the big picture, but the small picture, it's less stress in your life when you're not stuck in traffic, right?
No, definitely. Yeah, you're like, you know, saving on gas. I'd say you're saving all around. Because, I mean, you get your hours in. If you want to come in, you can make more money at, like, you know, a time and a half.
Hey.
Or you can just enjoy that extra day off and get everything done that you need to in the middle of the day when no one's out.
Ben, thank you so much for your call. We appreciate it.
We just have an email from a federal employee, Jim. Could this be true?
What did they say?
Steven says that federal employees have the option of taking a day off for every 3 days they spend reading through reporters' emails.
Fine. Thank you. Okay, we're going to, you know, through the, in the days, every time we have a three-day weekend, let's revisit this thing and try to build something. How about that? Let's have a cause that we actually win, Marjorie, before our
Another
careers
crusade?
Are over. Another crusade.
Jim, we haven't been very successful with
No,
our
we haven't,
crusades.
Marjorie. We haven't. But our hearts are in the right place.
You know why?
Why?
We get all revved up and then we abandon them.
We do.
We have to stick to it, Jim.
I know.
Stick to it.
You know what the problem is?
That is the crucial
we always
ingredient
do it
we're missing.
Right before a three-day weekend, and then I have a three-day weekend, I forget about it. That's part of the problem.
All right. Okay, so what's Emily Rooney's take on Lieutenant Governor Tim Murray's resignation? Where does she come down on the don't ask, don't tell rules that apply to the Boy Scouts? Stay tuned for her take on the week's news next on Open Mic with Emily Rooney.
Of higher education is already on the verge of a revolution. Hi, I'm Kara Miller, host of Innovation Hub, inviting you to attend a live panel discussion with top educators at Suffolk University's Modern Theater. We'll look at College 2.0, from brick-and-mortar institutions to online learning. It's Tuesday, June 4th. Learn more at innovationhub.org.
This program is made possible thanks to you and the Massachusetts Teachers Association, reminding you that learning doesn't just happen in the classroom. It happens all day, every day. Working together, parents and teachers can make this a successful school year for every child in Massachusetts. And Safety Insurance, committed to safe driving. Safety Insurance would like to remind Massachusetts drivers that it is now illegal to text and drive. You can learn more at safetyinsurance.com. Be safe. Don't text and drive.
I'm reporter Ann Mastu. I live in Boston, and I bring you news from Boston.
Rob Vandermark is an owner at Ride Studio. He's troubled by the deaths of five cyclists in Boston and at least one outside the city this year.
I'm here because I'm passionate about finding the truth, and giving voice to the people in our community.
I've been on country roads where I've had cars throw things at me. I've had country roads.
Anne Mostu, WGBH, Boston Public Radio.
This program is on WGBH thanks to you and Suffolk University, committed to leading the conversation about technology and innovation in higher education. Host of Innovation Hub's College 2.0 event at Suffolk's Modern Theater, 7 p.m. on June 4th. ModernTheater.com. And Fruitlands Museum, 4 historic exhibition buildings and over 200 acres of meadows and trails. Now through June, presenting Visions, Tim Hetherington, a photojournalism exhibit. More at fruitlands.org.
Welcome back to Boston Public Radio. I'm Jim Browdy and she is Marjorie Egan. She joins us every Friday on Open Mic to share her thoughts on issues of the day. And then she treats us to a weekly installment of Emily's List. Hello, Emily Rooney.
Hey, Jim.
Hey,
Marjorie.
Emily.
Long weekend. Very excited.
It is a long weekend.
Yeah.
Actually, we just talked about it. It's funny because we weren't going to bring this up with you, but since you just mentioned, I have been a huge advocate for decades of the four-day work week in America. Do a 10-hour kind of thing. And I know some people can't do that. You're making a face already.
No, I'm with it.
Wouldn't it be fabulous?
First of all, most people have way too much downtime during their job. You know, this is a little different where you're here and you have a broadcast. But most jobs aren't like that. I agree. I think you could get more. We used to have it at Channel 5, by the way, for the union guys who worked a four-day work week. They worked 10 hours a day, 4 days a week.
Well, also,
it was a great system.
How many days, I mentioned this earlier, how many days have you been looking forward to the fact that you have a three-day weekend? For like 2 weeks, Marjorie and I have been talking about it. So, you'd be able to do this every week.
Exactly.
In any case, okay, let's get to some other stuff.
So let's talk a little bit about Tim Murray, the lieutenant governor who, of course, resigned this week to take another job at running the Worcester Chamber of Commerce. He didn't get a lot of good press.
No. I started reflecting on this, and we're actually going to talk about it on Beat the Press tonight. And I think he got a bad rap from the get-go. People were describing him as the doughboy. They were mocking him for how, you're laughing.
Marjorie's
for his diminutive
laughing,
size, the fact that he's so low-key and doesn't have a big personality. I mean, he was really never given much of a shot. He was, considered a bit player. And then when these two incidents happened, we never, ever, ever gave him the benefit of the doubt. We were all leaping, all of us, Jim, you leapt
Excuse
to the
me,
conclusion.
The reason we never gave him the benefit of the doubt, let's go one at a time. The reason he didn't get the benefit of the doubt on the crash of the car in November of 2 years ago was twofold. One, because the story changed constantly. And two, because he was asked by the press, let's have your cell phone records. Mm-hmm. Well, I didn't use the cell phone. Well, fine, then give us the records. That'll prove that. Why didn't he give us the cell phone
records?
Well,
that was Governor Patrick, as you recall, because he didn't want it to be the camel's nose under the tent. As soon as you get one guy's phone records, you're going to be asking for everybody's. I'm just saying, no one ever gave him the benefit of the doubt. We're still not.
I know, but the thing about the ride was so weird. Who do you know that goes 108 miles per hour in their pajamas and their slippers? And then it just was such a strange.
He did. That's
story.
What he said he did.
With no seatbelt on. The whole thing was so bizarre, and you never really, you're going out to survey storm damage, and then you're going to, before that, you're going to get a Herald and a cup of coffee.
So that bothers you more than the association with
Oh, no.
Let's
the
move
association
on to that for a second.
McLaughlin.
Since you're being so kind, I can't believe this is you, Emily.
I know.
Let's just stay on the McLaughlin thing for a second. Since the McLaughlin thing broke, and since the Globe mentioned they had 200 cell phone conversations over a year and a half period between them, which wasn't explained terribly well. How many times did you interview Tim Murray?
No, he has no.
How many
not
times you interviewed
show.
Tim Murray?
He would not be interviewed. Right,
exactly.
But he did,
so how do, can
he
you
did
come
give
to
an
his
interview to Joe Schwartz?
Yes, he did. One tough. Interview. That is exactly. And I would argue that if you want the benefit of the doubt, to use your argument of a minute ago, then go answer all questions.
But there's a whole bunch of people who have refused to come on both of our shows, Jim, for various reasons. We take it very personally, and then we hold it against them, and we assume the worst.
Well, exactly. And the way you allay the concerns about the worst is by answering questions.
But I think the thing is about Murray is that after these things came to – and he's a nice guy.
Yes.
I've interviewed him many times. I remember before he became lieutenant governor, talking to people up in Worcester. They love him up in Worcester. But then you find out not only the association with McLaughlin, but – we talk about patronage a lot in Massachusetts. And to me, if you're given a summer job or a low-level job to someone who's very qualified for that low-level job or even a high-level job if they're very qualified, that's okay. But we now know that Tim Murray put people in charge of safety. The woman that had that was the driving –
Sheila Burgess.
Sheila Burgess that had this
–
Well, he had some association with that, but so did a couple other people have their hands in it. We've only ever focused on his weaknesses. That's all I'm saying. We've never given him – any credit for anything else he's done for economic development. And
what did he do?
Well, that's what he says he did, that he's, you know, he's been this, you know, big voice for the gateway cities and that he's really focused on central Massachusetts, which is as important as the Boston, the greater Boston area. And he's, you know, been into economic development there. I don't know. I mean,
But wait a second. But let's talk about that issue for a second. Deval Patrick regales us with, and by the way, he's been doing it when he makes his monthly appearance with us. Virtually every time Murray's name comes up, including in terms of these controversies, he's defended him to the hilt. At the retirement press conference a couple of days ago, Deval Patrick goes down a litany of things where Tim Murray has taken the lead. And my point right then was, well, wait a second. If this guy is so crucial to the administration in so many ways, how dare he dishonor a commitment he made to the taxpayers serve? What do you mean,
people have dishonored commitments, including a whole bunch of our governors, for heaven's sake.
That's right.
By the way,
I'm not defending
that. Yeah, but then he shouldn't run again. If he knew he was looking, essentially what he did, Emily, at least, is, and I'm not giving him benefit of the doubt. I'm not done yet. I am, but here, essentially what he said is, I'm trolling around for a job. I got a $75,000 increase, so I'm going to dishonor my commitment to the taxpayers.
He knew his future was not going anywhere in politics, so he took.
We gave him such a tough
time. I don't think that's a big deal.
I can't believe you are blaming us for his unwillingness to answer any questions about anything.
As I said to him the other day, if he gets
Tim
a big call,
if you're listening, I'm defending you. Now come on my show and answer those questions.
Yeah. What do you think he does if the call comes in from MSNBC or ABC?
Oh yeah, you'd be at it.
See you later, Marjorie. You'd be gone in 2 seconds.
What? Gone in a heartbeat.
I'm sorry, I can't hear you. What did you say?
Let's move on.
Okay, let's move on. Yesterday, an historic vote. We also discussed this a little bit earlier, too. An historic vote in Grapevine or someplace in Texas near Dallas. Boy Scouts, it's sort of a half a loaf thing, as we described it. Yes, if you're a scout, you can be openly gay. If you're an adult leader, well, we didn't even take that thing up, so the rule stays in place. You can't be openly gay. Is half a loaf better than none?
No, it is the absolutely most ridiculous half-baked thing I've ever heard of in my life. So an eight-year-old who's openly gay can be a Boy Scout. Then when he turns 18, he's a man and he's old enough to be a scout leader. He's out. Think about it.
It is kind of ridiculous.
So 10 years, it's almost like age discrimination. What are you talking
about?
But
I do think it's better than nothing, because I think I think that within months they're going to get rid of the leader thing too, because it is ridiculous. You can't say to somebody, you can be a scout for 10 years and then you're an Eagle Scout at 18, your history. It's just nuts.
Well, what's the pussyfooting around about? Why not just make the decision? I mean, they're taking a vote. It's a critical vote. Make the vote. They only took it halfway.
I
think it would be best if they took it all the way, but I think it's certainly better than nothing. I think it's certainly better to be able to say that we're going to keep these kids in there. I think GLAAD is going to go after this, pursue this. I think there could be lawsuits. I think they're going to fold. I think they're absolutely going to fold.
The Scouts. Well, you know about what's happening.
The Scouts are going to fold.
Well, except they're going to be – there's a division. There's a schism now, and a lot of the people who are unhappy have taken their bowl and gone home, and they're creating a non-gay – I agree with you, by the way – a non-gay – Scouts, which is just
so. What are they going to do?
Right,
are they going to ask the little 8-year olds?
Yeah,
what their sexual
I'm sure they are.
Is?
I am sure. You know, essentially, what the policy has been there. We should be clear: is don't ask, don't tell. My understanding is, if you kept it to yourself as a little boy, which is really appalling, they put kids in this position. If you're gay and you're 12 years old, as long as you don't tell anybody, you can be in the Scouts. But if you choose to be liberated and disclose openly that I'm a gay,
that's the same.
Boy.
Presumably, the same as being a scout leader. If you're openly gay, you can't
exactly
be a leader, but
right.
Of course there's plenty of scout leaders that are gay. Of course they are.
Well, the thing is, I mean, I've said this a million times, but this whole thing is over. The whole gay rights thing, it's going to be, the Catholic bishops are going to be all by themselves, because even the evangelicals, the younger ones, are saying enough of this gay bashing stuff. We've had it. We have friends that are gay in high school. Enough of this.
Well, friends that are gay in high school. How about the fact, I mean, we've had this discussion, I think, on and off the air. If the priests have showed the same courage they ultimately showed through the Boston Priest Forum when they stood up to Cardinal Law and said, he's got to go. Remember, what was the name of that great priest, one of my favorite of all time?
He was in Sharon.
One of the great men I've ever met in my life. And if we don't remember it now, which we won't, we'll say it later in the show, because he passed away a few years ago. He's great. Why don't the priests rise up, Marjorie, since you're a good churchgoer, and say, bishops, 47% of us are gay. 47% of us are gay.
I think, and I hope none of my priest friends are listening, that they have not been great profiles and courage. They should have, because it would turn everything around. I'm a little bit more
Bob
hopeful.
Was his first name. What's his last name? We'll get to it in a couple of minutes. I'm sorry. Hey, so speaking of the Boy Scout, I sort of agree with both of you. I hate when people do this. I agree as a matter of principle with you. Yeah. They should have gone the whole way. But the flip side is, once this has happened, the next step is going to... But if I may ask a question, and this may be a little bit out of school, and so refused to answer. Someone asked you the other day when we were discussing this, if you had been a Girl Scout when you were a child. And you had a rather Emily Rooney-ian answer. What was the answer?
I said I was kicked out.
And what was that about, if I may ask?
I think I just, I know that I just didn't go along with some of the rules and regulations.
Like what, like what, for example?
You know, like that brownie outfit you had to wear?
It was some of the things that you had to do to win the badge.
Like what? Give us an example.
I can't remember, like but I know I was asked to leave. I can't remember.
She was recalcitrant.
Wait a second.
You were not make her quota of Girl Scout cookies.
We're not going to leave this quite yet. You were asked, how old were you when you were asked to leave?
8 or 9.
What kind of person, what kind of Girl Scout?
Exactly the same as I am right now.
Excuse me. They said to one of your parents, I'm sorry, your child has to leave.
They said it to me.
Did you have to leave the Girl Scouts?
Yes. A disgrace. With a little brownie cap
I was
in
asked
hand.
To leave.
Yeah. I think we got
to
get to the bottom of that.
I'll try to remember what it was. I mean, I have a repressed memory.
I can understand that. I don't blame you.
Those little pins you put in your
had a
like
few,
dress.
Not a lot.
I was a brownie. I was never a Girl Scout.
Yeah. Why don't you ask me, Marjorie?
Okay, Jim. Are you a scout?
Obviously not.
Yeah,
I don't take orders.
Remember
terribly
the day
well.
Yeah, that was my problem.
What's that?
Once before, Jim and I publicly were talking about Eagle Scouts. Remember the day people were complaining about the Eagle Scouts?
I do very well.
Yeah, that did not go down very well, did it?
No.
People making fun of Eagle Scouts.
No.
What's the point of that? Where are you going with that?
I don't know. I just brought
okay,
it up.
Okay, fine. Thank you for that. Now, Emily, we have discussed the last several weeks in anticipation of the start of the Whitey Bulger trial, the fact that cameras are not allowed in the courtrooms. Of federal courtrooms, except in these experimental situations. Edgar B. Herwick III actually did some research. Mm-hmm. And according to him, I found this quite interesting. I think we operated on the assumption that the federal courts have the power to do their own rules. And so essentially there's nothing anybody can do from outside. His interpretation is the Supreme Court transmits the rules of the Judicial Conference of the United States to Congress. Congress, quote, must transmit a copy of its rules to Congress no later than May 1st of the year. And the new rule, I'm sorry, Congress retains the power to reject the court's proposed rules, to modify them, or enact rules or amendments themselves, meaning Congress could decide to open up federal courts to the taxpayers of Massachusetts.
They're never going to book the Supreme Court on this. They're going to make the Supreme Court do it. The Supreme Court was the one that opened up the courts to cameras in the first place, because that criminal rules of procedures, that document that goes on for decades, originally banned cameras in all courts, and then they handed it over to the states. We talked about this last week. So it became jurisdictionally a state's right to decide, and all 50 states did.
In state and local courts, not in federal courts, obviously, because they have no jurisdiction over that. But maybe I asked this last week, and maybe I'm repressing this too. If a Supreme Court justice who was an honest and forthright soul were to be asked the question, why is it okay to have a camera in a state courtroom, criminal or civil, but it's not okay to have a camera in a federal courtroom with the same kind of case? What would their answer
be? There is no justifiable answer. Nancy Gertner said that last week. There is no justifiable answer.
And you know what else is really crazy? I don't want these people that do these artist renderings to lose their jobs, but that's crazy.
Oh, it doesn't
too.
Make it. It doesn't.
You have to. You can't have a still camera, so you have to take drawings, make drawings of everybody in the defendant and the lawyers and all, and the judge. It's just crazy.
I can't believe that they're not somehow going to secretly record this for posterity. You know what I mean?
What, the Whitey Bulger thing?
Yeah,
who has ever? No.
The court
who has done that? I had heard rumors since he's free that Tim Murray was thinking of taping the proceedings and then playing them exclusively on your show.
Yeah.
But that's unconfirmed.
He's a good guy. Tim Murray is a very good guy. We should say that.
Now, would we carry it live here if we could? I mean, if we had the audio, the streaming audio?
Once the trial actually started, as opposed to the pretrial proceedings, I think the answer is yes. Plus, who would not watch it on television, too? Or listen to it.
Oh, I'd love
to
watch it on television. I'm halfway through the second of the Cullen Shelley Murphy book. I've already read the Dick Lear O'Neill book. I'm so excited about this trial. But you know, I'm going to be devastated if Whitey does not take the stand.
Oh, I think he will.
I think he will too.
But see, we won't get to hear it.
We won't get to hear it. That's true. It's going to be very devastating.
So we get Jodi Arias, essentially, in Arizona, getting and arguing, you know, making her plea to live.
That?
I did. I'm embarrassed to say. I didn't watch it live.
I did because
I watched a lot of it on CNN because that's all they do.
Arizona plays by different rules. What can I say? First of all, they allow that Fox News reporter to interview her
right after a conviction.
Well, that would be unheard of here.
Unbelievable.
And then that Marjorie, you got to turn that phone off.
Fine, somebody's calling Marjorie. Oh, it's actually Tim Murray calling in Marjorie.
Then they allow her to do a whole presentation in court, a slideshow, you know, a PowerPoint presentation on what a good person she is.
You know, my favorite moment
would never happen here.
My favorite moment, and I'm embarrassed to admit that I actually know this because I watched a lot on tape of her plea for life after she had said immediately after the trial she wanted the death penalty, is amongst the reasons, I shouldn't laugh because obviously a guy's dead, so I'll stop laughing. Amongst the reasons she said to the jury as to why she should be spared is because she would lead a recycling program in the prison.
And she was going to cut her hair and send it to Love for Locks. Or
right, which
that
she's already
was.
Done. Yeah. It's unbelievable.
Oh, CNN really did not do itself any favors by covering this.
Well, you know what they did? They gave the public what they wanted.
Ratings went through the roof.
Is that true, actually?
Through the roof.
Because of the Arias trial itself? Okay, enough of this. Here it is. This is what you tune in for every Friday. We're aware of this. Listen up.
Incomprehensible.
It's out of control.
How about common sense?
Doesn't matter.
Why not?
This is the kind of thing that drives people crazy.
It's your right.
Doesn't matter.
I have absolutely no interest.
It's the best of Emily Rooney, otherwise known as Emily's List.
All right,
what's on the
list
this week, please?
All right,
we'll be the judge of that. Go ahead.
All right, starting with comments. Yesterday there was comments about that rapist who had been on the loose for 30 years and he's
Marjorie
finally
wrote
being
a piece about him.
I know, I can't think of his name, but Irving.
So Gary Irving.
The Globe is doing a piece yesterday on boston.com about the sentencing, and that the comments section is open. You should have seen the comments. It was revolting. It was vile. It was disgusting. Why would you even allow comments on something like that? We have to have more discrimination. This whole you know because you get comments.
But you know
yourself.
Who has the solution? Dan Kennedy, who's a regular on your show. What's wrong with his solution?
Yeah,
you have to sign your whole name.
Wait a minute.
And 90% of those would disappear.
Yeah. I don't understand. They were discussing toward whom? The victims?
The victims. Towards the victims.
Oh, I didn't know that either.
Yeah. And I'm going to say 80% of them were taken down. Why put them up? Anyway, that's
how could
just
they be
one.
Criticizing the victims? These were teenage girls.
Oh, he's done his time. He lived in Maine. All that kind of stuff.
I just want to point out that the woman whose sister I interviewed, this girl was 16 years old, never had a boyfriend, walking home from softball practice in her cleats when this guy abducted her at knife point.
But 80% of the comments were
how can
really
they,
vile.
Oh,
Emily,
my God.
Before you move to your next Emily's List item, do you agree that the best solution is Dan Kennedy's?
Absolutely.
Sign your full name if you
full
don't identify yourself.
Home address and home phone number.
Or whatever. What's number
full
two?
Full disclosure.
Okay, we agree with you on that one.
All right, Anthony Weiner, I got to get this off my chest. This is, talk about violent, disgusting. This man is not, you know, he is not redeemable. My nephew was his press secretary for a year.
When he was a congressperson?
When he was a congressperson. He was the one who actually set up his Twitter account.
No.
Yep. This man, the way he speaks to the staff, the way he said, I can't even say here what he, the kinds of things he said to my nephew.
Well, you know what? There are a couple of great developments, though, in the Anthony Weiner case. There are three that I can think of. Do you hear what Andrew Cuomo, the governor, said?
I love this.
If the people of New York City were to elect him as mayor, what should the headline in the paper be? Shame on us. That's one.
Yeah.
Two, he made three allegations in this YouTube video he released at 1 a.m. One, his critical role in healthcare. Two, his getting $1 billion for cops on the street, and I forget what the third one was. All three were debunked by the New York Times the next day, saying he completely misrepresented.
I wouldn't be surprised to be
But
one.
Here's the best. Did you ever go to his website?
Yes.
If you go to his website, there's a picture of a beautiful skyline. Obviously, he wants to be mayor of New York. Did you read what city the skyline is?
Pittsburgh.
That's hilarious.
I mean, but
how
by the way, say
that?
What you just said, because I
because he
to
says
agree
he's socially socially media inept or something like
he
that.
He could
well,
win
yeah.
this thing. Did you read?
He could win this.
I'm
thing.
Obsessed with this too. A woman hugs him in Harlem.
Yeah.
His first public event in Harlem, and a reporter goes up to the woman and said, "How is that?" She said, "I don't want him to hug me. I want him to text me." He's
so
like a
he
rock
wins.
Star.
Why? Because he's a celebrity, even though he's
it's
notorious.
Like Arnold Schwarzenegger. Why does that?
Oh God! And
exactly.
And what is up with his wife?
And oh well, it's time to forgive him. And no, he is not.
Can you give us one thing from your nephew or not?
I can't.
How bad on a scale of 1 to 10?
It's a 10.
Okay.
Bad.
Okay. Next.
Okay.
Week
that's
all right.
Bad.
Here we go. So Marjorie, here's one for you.
Okay.
This actually stunned me. Took me by surprise. So I was out of my normal routine last Sunday. I drove up from New York. And I ended up walking to a nearby CVS downtown to buy a newspaper. Usually, anyway. So I get some other stuff, and I'm looking around. I said, "Well," I finally say to the guy, "Well, where are the newspapers?" He says, "We don't have any newspapers. We don't carry the newspapers." And I said, "What are you talking about?" I then called That was Boylston Street. I called Newbury Street, Milk Street, Winter Street, Tremont Street, Downtown Crossing. They do not carry newspapers in CVS's anymore. I know, look at your
devastated.
Face.
Devastated.
Then I called the CVS in Newton and Watertown. You'll be happy to know. They do carry them. But what is this saying? What is...
I'm stunned.
I couldn't believe it.
I used to, until I got them all delivered on Sunday, I used to buy my newspapers at CVS.
This says a lot both about the newspaper business and about the drugstore. They obviously weren't selling the papers, and they were giving them back every day. But all of downtown Boston.
Oh, look at Marjorie's face.
You cannot buy a newspaper.
So did you buy aspirin while you were there?
I did.
Just as long as you did.
All right, here's another thing.
There's more?
Here's another thing you can't buy.
This is great.
What can't you buy?
Do you guys garden at all?
Yeah,
did you ever?
A little bit.
Did you used to plant?
All right. I like to plant.
A lot of people probably already know this. I didn't know this. You know what impatiens are?
Yes.
The most popular.
Even I know what they are, yeah.
You can't buy them.
Why not? Why not?
Because they've been destroyed by some fungus. You can't go to any plant store, any, what do you call those things? Anywhere.
Plant stores, we call them. Plant stores can't go anywhere.
So you can't
get newspaper and you can't get
impatiens.
No
impatiens. Impatiens because they'll grow in the shade.
You can't buy them. They've been destroyed. It's like the white nose fungus.
Why don't you tell Emily what your dream is, your post-media career, what you want to do?
Flower arranger.
Yes.
I'm good at that,
and it's totally true. It's what she wants to do.
I love arranging flowers.
I do, too.
What's your favorite flower?
Oh, gosh. That, you know, you've got me stumped.
Lilies.
I really
like... I love lilies.
I like lilies, but sometimes I don't like the smell of them. But I love, you know, all different, like this time of year is great with the peonies and all
that.
All right, and finally, Somerville's ban on styrofoam cups. What you really need to ban is Dunkin' Donuts. Forget banning them.
No, excuse me. Obviously, you don't know what you're talking about. This is an area where I have some expertise. If you go to Dunkin' Donuts, Marjorie knows they've been talking about this for 15 years.
Yes, you have.
If you order a small coffee, which is the only size I order, not because I want a small coffee, but why do I order a small coffee, Marjorie?
Because it comes in a paper cup, Jim.
Exactly. So there's a way around the styrofoam dilemma.
I got news for you. The only people who drop their cups on the street are Dunkin' Donuts drinkers, not Starbucks. It's just true.
That is really an elitist kind of approach.
It's
really.
It's observationally true. Dunkin' Donuts drinkers drop their cups
on the
street.
And
that's really what this ban
is
about. That's what the ban is about. They want to stop people from dropping cups on the street.
Well, what's wrong with that? What's wrong with asking people to stop?
Just go right to the source.
I can't
Dunkin'
believe
Donuts.
I'm not going to have my impatience this year.
No, I know. Okay, fine.
All right, I'm done.
Okay, thank God. Now, here, what are you doing on Beat the Press tonight, Emily Rooney?
Well, I told you we are doing, we're going to take a look at the coverage of Tim Murray, see if, you know, he was given a fair shot over all these years. Mm-hmm. And what else we've got? Oh, this whole thing about scandals, you know, is Benghazi and the IRS thing, is that the same on the level of Watergate or Anthony Weiner or Bill Clinton? I mean, when does it reach
Nothing
scandal?
Nothing rises to the level of Anthony Weiner,
no.
I would say.
That was
so
a scandal, but I don't... Is Benghazi a scandal?
No, that's a great topic. Yeah. Scandal or controversy, that's on Beat the Press.
Okay.
Then stay tuned for the rest.
Okay, Emily Rooney, it has been a great pleasure. We'll see you again next Friday.
You know, we couldn't remember the name of the priest that was the first to sign the priest letter, which ultimately resulted in Cardinal Bernard Laws resigning. His name was Robert Bullock, Our Lady of Sorrows Church in Sharon. He was a very courageous guy, the first one to sign it. He is no longer with us. He passed away a couple of years ago, but great guy. Anyway, what do John McCain, dogs, and Paula Deen have in common? They are all fair game on our Friday news quiz. This is going to be great. Stay tuned for that at 89.7. WGBH Boston Public.
Before she was known as the Queen of Creole Cuisine, Leah Chase started her restaurant career as a waitress in New Orleans' French Quarter. And those restaurants with crisp white tablecloths and fancy food gave her an idea.
I said, well, wait, we got to bring this to my side of the town.
She tells us how next time on Tell Me More.
This afternoon at 2, here on 89.7 WGBH.
Funding for our programs comes from you and Citizens Bank, presenting sponsor of the 2013 Boston Globe WGBH Summer Arts Weekend, July 26th, 27th, and 28th in Boston's Copley Square. You can learn more at bostonsummerarts.com. And Neighborhood Kitchens. Join host Margarita Martinez as she visits local restaurants on a quest to explore culture through food. Don't miss Neighborhood Kitchens, Saturday at 4 on WGBH 2.
Welcome back to Boston Public Radio. Jim Browdy and Marjorie Egan. It's time for our Friday news quiz. You know, there was a lot of comedy and tragedy in the news this week, and that's the theme for today. Joining us to represent comedy, we hope, is comedian Chris Tapp. Chris, we haven't seen you in ages. How are you?
It's not my fault. You guys changed zip codes on me.
Exactly.
Nobody called me or anything.
He was looking for us.
Nobody sent me a card.
He smells today, too.
Smells great. Okay, let's examine this for a minute. What exactly is it you're wearing there, Chris Dabb?
I would be wearing Ode to the Ghetto. No, actually.
Ode to the Ghetto.
I believe it's some exotic scent or something, wrestling or something.
Okay, fine.
I think he's on the prowl. Would that be fair to say?
I don't listen. Also with us in Studio 3, representing tragedy in a different sort of sense, is Steve Esposito. He's an associate professor of classical studies at BU. Steve, it's great to meet you.
Okay.
Likewise.
What exactly?
You didn't have to wear the mask, dude. Jesus, he's taking it way too far right now.
He's going to be crying in
Nobody
just a couple of minutes.
Nobody told me anything.
Classical studies, is that Greek, Latin?
It's Greek and Latin, and the ancient world, ancient Greece and
Latin.
Rome.
Latin. What was the name of the guy who does the linguist column for the Globe? We had him on a couple of weeks ago,
Pegasus?
A couple of months ago, talking about, does anybody besides the Pope speak Latin? I mean, what's the answer to the question, Steve? Who speaks Latin these days?
Nobody.
So it's good you're teaching it.
Actually, more and more high school teachers are doing that and college teachers are doing that. So, for example, you can go to Rome and take a course in how to speak Latin. A guy named Reggie Foster was a priest who did that until recently, passed away, I think.
Okay, Steve.
Retired.
Here's my theory. Since they don't teach grammar anymore in the schools very much, English grammar, Latin helps you with your grammar, does it not? And it helps you identify words, foreign words.
I'd say
words.
Yes if I were you.
I find Latin, since I made my children take it, very helpful.
It's fabulous. That
it's crazy.
Well,
they don't
think?
Even teach Latin at
think?
Boston Latin Academy. That's a Spanish high school.
It's ridiculous.
That's why you haven't been on in a few months,
years.
Chris.
Steve, you didn't answer my question, though. Do you think it – am I right or am I wrong?
Oh, totally right. Yeah.
There you go.
Same with Greek.
I'm vindicated.
Right. In a minute, you're going to hear me murder the English language in a moment, so please
And we're also going to tell you where you're going to murder it tomorrow night. We'll give you a preview of that in a couple of minutes.
Certainly.
But since you're much more of a classical person than I, why don't you ask the first question of Steve, then I'll ask the questions of Chris Tapp. Go ahead,
okay.
Marjorie.
Look out.
You're going to identify this person. You're going to hear him talk in a second and tell us why he's in the news this week.
Look, I made some big mistakes, and I know I let a lot of people down. But I've also learned some tough lessons. I'm running for mayor because I've been fighting for the middle class and those struggling to make it my entire life. And I hope I get a second chance to work for you.
Thank goodness this is not Chris Tapp's question, is all I can say.
You know, that must be Weiner.
Yes, well, actually, it's Wiener.
Wiener, there you go.
Anthony Wiener.
Wow.
Even
How do
worse.
You come back? I mean, quickly, do you think this guy, is his brand so ruined by the text thing? Can he make a comeback or not?
Why not? The guy in South Carolina did.
Well, that's true. Mark Sanford. That's a very good point.
I think an immediate change of the last name is probably going to be first on the, I'd abandon that immediately.
Yeah, how do you get in a scandal
involving
that? He should
change his name to Mark Jones.
Okay, let's move ahead, Chris, if you know what I mean.
Okay.
Now, Chris, you ready for your first question?
I think so, but okay, I hope this isn't going to be the... Because I get cheated every time I come on.
You mean cheated because you don't know the answer?
No, not at all.
You went to school. You're a local kid, right? Didn't
I
go through this?
I am.
Where are you from again?
Mattapan. Which
is
an Indian word that means many black people, Mr. Professor. In case you didn't know that, you can wick Wikipedia that,
Why
sir.
Why did I ask that question?
There you go.
Here's
I got
your
you,
question,
brother.
Chris Tapp. Let's
do it.
Whatever. Who is this making fun of himself? And you have a two-part question. Why is he in the news this week? Go ahead.
Well, I want to thank Jack for the opportunity to be here and actually to go early because I got to be in Holyoke for their parade in about 15 minutes. but I don't want anyone to worry about it because this morning, as acting governor, I signed an executive order raising the speed limit to 108 miles an hour.
Nice.
Okay, so the two questions are, who's making fun of himself? Was it a St. Patrick's Day breakfast? And why is that particular person in the news this week? Chris Tapp, please.
I would say Lieutenant Governor Mr. Mario Andretti himself, Tim Martin. Did you see the condition of the car?
I know. Is it amazing
bad.
He survived?
It looked like a transformer.
No, really, it's totally true.
No,
unbelievable. I don't think he was in it.
Well, he supposedly was in it in his jammies and his slippers.
No, I think
Chris
he flipped it and then pulled up in a cab 5 minutes later and said, oh, my God, I survived.
By the way, do you know it's tie after one round? Is that incredible?
That's really exciting, Jim.
Right out of the gate, buddy.
Okay,
go,
Steve Esposito, here's question two from Marjorie.
Okay, this is a tough one. A well-known psychedelic rock musician died this week. Here he is in an interview from a couple of years back, or a few years back, I should say.
You don't make music for immortality. You make music for the moment, for capturing the sheer joy of being alive on planet Earth. Wow, is this fun.
Do you have any idea who that is, Steve?
Give him a hint. Give him a hint about the group without giving it away.
Okay. I know that the lead guitarist of 10 Years After died, but I think it was maybe 2 weeks ago.
That wasn't him.
No,
nope,
he was.
Yeah, you're still buying eight tracks, aren't you, Steve?
He was the lead guitarist for a guy who, the big guy in the band died very young from a drug overdose.
He's one of the many people who died at age 27.
Okay. Yeah. Robbie Manzarek.
That's close
very
enough.
Good.
What?
Ray Manzarek, but close
Ray
enough.
Manzarek.
That is very impressive. How did you know that?
It wasn't Snoop
Dogg. I used to be a
Doors
fan.
Is that true? You're a Doors fan?
Snoop Dogg.
What? That was very good. Would you have known that, Chris?
I could say for the first time, I'm glad I didn't have that question.
That's fine. Okay, so it's 2-1.
Look out.
This is your opportunity to tie this thing.
Operation Snow Job.
Chris Tabb, President Obama faced a persistent heckler yesterday.
My man,
obese. Where was he? Where was he? And what was he talking about? Here
B-Rock
it is.
B-Rock obese.
So today, once again,
102 today.
I'm about to address it, ma'am, but you got to let me speak. I'm about to address it.
Commander-in-Chief.
Let me address it.
Why don't you let me address it, ma'am?
Okay, so the question is, where was he? I mean, I don't even know if we need to know the specific place, but what was he basically doing, and what was he talking about? Go ahead, Krista.
I know he was talking about the drones.
That's good.
He was talking
we'll give you
the
that
drones,
part of it,
which
yeah.
was probably driving Lieutenant Murray's car at the time.
and
closing Guantanamo Bay.
That's given the points. He was the National
I
Defense
say we
University.
Give the point.
Excellent
you know what?
Job.
Does anybody know why that? I don't know. Did you hear the speech yesterday, Obama's speech?
I heard excerpts.
That woman went on and
she was
on.
She's from Code
and
Pink.
On and
on. They do that.
But I wonder why they didn't do what they usually do, which is after a few seconds, if you keep going, you get
because
a score
I am
that.
Sure that Listen. The word is when you're the president of the United States, he is probably and seriously direct. I don't want anybody thrown out of my speeches unless right. they're violent.
You can't
I
just go tasing people when the president's talking.
Who did that? John Kerry. When John Kerry was speaking, when he was running for president, was "Don't tase me, bro." Was it a John Kerry speech?
Yeah, John Kerry.
It was a John Kerry.
But they don't have to tase her. I just wondered
why. They could have shot her with a crossbow, Marjorie. But I mean, the tasing is a little bit more humane.
Oh,
but hey, we can go your way with it.
She just went on, la 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 la.
I'm going to buy her album, before it's because she was incredible.
Now, Chris, when you used to be on our former show and I'd say, where were you appearing? You had never had any idea. Do you have any idea where you're appearing? I'll give you a hint. It's tomorrow. Do you know where it is?
Tomorrow night, I'm heading down Route 24.
Oh, yeah.
And I believe it's Buzzard's Play, Buzzard's Bay Playhouse. Which
Buzzard's
they call
Play Productions.
Buzzard's Play Productions.
Do you want an extra point? It's in Wareham, Massachusetts.
Carolee's Comedy Corner, who treats me so well. I want everybody to come out. Come down to Wareham. Check me out. Me, James Dorsey, and Elsier, I think. Anthony.
It's good you know you're playing.
I'm going to be a straight man.
That's how you are? That's good. By the way,
you
get tickets at buzzardsplayproductions.com. Now, here's a bonus question for you.
Let's do it.
Who is a very famous person who grew up in Wareham who was on our show this week?
Actress.
In fact, either of you. Either of you jump in.
Very tall.
She was in one of the great girl buddy movies of all time in 1991.
Oh, Thelma and Louise?
Oh, yeah. So who is she?
What's it? Gina Davis.
Gina Davis.
Yeah. Look out, slam.
Give him no points.
Dunk. What are you talking
okay,
about?
Okay, fine. Now, are we switching to the lightning round yet or we're not? Okay, two more questions. Ask one of Steve Esposito,
okay,
Marjorie, please.
I am on question that begins with a museum, I think,
that
correct?
Is correct, yes.
Okay, a museum, Steve, is in the works to commemorate the career of a living culinary legend known for home cooking. Here she is on the radio show, Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, giving folks a tour of her kitchen.
There's pumpkin cake on the counter. There's a caramelized apple cake on the counter. There's a standing rib roast. Let me tell y'all what the best thing in my refrigerator is. It's a chocolate brownie cobbler.
Oof.
It will knock your socks clean off and into the washer.
Okay.
Would it be okay
this?
To say for some reason I'm turned on right now? That had to be the best description of food I have ever heard.
But it's not your question, Chris Tabb.
That's going to be my new hip hop name, Chocolate Brownie.
Do you have any idea, Steve?
I was going to say Julia Child before I heard the voice. Oh, dear.
Southern girl. She's obviously a Southern girl.
Blonde.
We interviewed her last year. She was great.
No, but she kind of reminds you a little bit of her. And she did have to cut down on the
she lost a few
chocolate
pounds.
Brownie cobbler.
You have any idea, Krista? You can steal the question.
Did she get hit in the face with a ham at one point in her life? Remember the lady that got hit in the face with a ham and she was helping out?
Who is
out?
She? Who is it?
I'm going to go with, I can't remember her name. She got hit in the face
Paula
with a ham.
Paula Deen. I have no idea.
Paula Deen got hit in the face with a ham.
She did? Why did she get hit in the face with a ham?
And my Facebook faithful, please look up if Paula Deen got hit in the face
right.
with a ham. She
I'm
was helping on a humanitarian effort.
They're
and somebody threw
she did
the
get
ham.
Hit in the face with a ham.
Boom!
You got a half point for knowing
Thank
that
you.
She got hit in the face
Thank
with a ham.
Thank you.
Can
Everybody,
I tell you something?
Mass
any
down.
Night at about 6 o'clock, I'd like to be hit in the face by a ham, frankly.
Hold on. We need to know why she got hit in the face with a ham.
She was helping out on a volunteer effort, and they were doing the thing where they go in the chain of people, and everybody hands one
accident.
Off.
Oh, it's an accident.
So she wasn't looking,
okay.
and the guy heaved a ham, and she got hit in
Fine.
The face
okay, that's
with
enough.
A ham.
Now,
and I mean,
okay,
Jewish
good,
people everywhere were so offended.
You're
it
looking at one right
ridiculous.
Here. I've never gotten over it, actually. Hey, Steve, before we go to the lightning round, Steve Esposito teaches classical studies. What's the demo? Who takes classical? I mean, you would. You're the kind of person, Marjorie, who loves this
Latin
kind of.
Latin for 4 years.
Who in 2013 takes classical studies? Really? I mean, who is that student?
A lot of medical students, pre-med students.
Really?
A lot of comm students.
Students whose parents want them to learn grammar.
If they don't know
that's
their grandmothers
thing, but
by then,
students who
I
want
mean,
their kids to learn how to think. I mean,
there you go.
Can you say Boston Public Radio is my favorite show in Latin?
Boston Public Radio is my favorite show in Latin.
No, I didn't mean. Can you repeat what I said? Oh my God!
I'm going to put this
He's
guy
teaching
on the
me how to be funny.
I'm putting him on the show tomorrow night.
This is horrible. Okay, now here's how the lightning round works. By the way, we take the themes and we reverse the question. So since he's the classical guy, Marjorie is going to ask you questions about Greek tragedy, and we are going to ask Steve questions about my big fat Greek wedding. You
Can
understand?
We have a totaling of the points right now?
Yeah,
you're
up by half a point. Don't worry about it. Now,
I thought I was up by 7.
No, you're up by half a point. Here's the first question for Marjorie. For Steve, I guess. Go ahead, Margaret.
Okay. This is multiple choice, Steve. We have three stories about my big fat Greek wedding, and which among these three is true? A, when the main characters Tula and Ian go out on their first date, they get frozen yogurt. This inspired the Ben & Jerry's limited edition frozen yogurt called My Big Fat Froyo. That's A. B, when Nia Vardalos was shopping around her screenplay to make it more marketable, Hollywood executives wanted to make the film about a Jewish girl, renaming the film My Ginormous Zoftig Wedding. Or C, My Big Fat Greek Wedding inspired the reality TV show My Big Fat Obnoxious Wedding.
B.
No.
Do you have any idea, Chris? You can steal this baby, too. He wasn't listening.
Can I have the choices?
No,
once
you
again?
Can't.
I'm going to go with A.
That would be wrong, too.
Okay. It
Thank
was
you
C.
Very much.
He didn't get music.
My Big Fat Wedding inspired the short-lived 2003 reality show, My Big Fat Obnoxious Wedding. Wasn't that one of the great movies?
Oh, yeah.
That was a good movie.
It was a really good movie.
All right. Let's
it's okay.
Go with it. I'm
so
still
can
up
you say
half.
Anything in Latin? I'm sorry. I'm obsessed with this now. Can you say something in Latin to
yeah.
impress us?
Summa cum laude.
Oh, thank you.
That's how he graduated.
That is probably true. Jesus. Is that
talking,
true, Krista?
Talking about my parents right in front of me. It's tragic.
Okay. Here you go, Chris. This is for
right
you, Krista, who is at Buzzards Bay Play Productions, buzzardsplayproductions.com for tickets tomorrow night in Wareham. That's the 25th.
Let's
Here's a
it.
Question. In Oedipus Rex, when Oedipus finds out that he has married his own mother, with whom he had 4 children, he blinds himself. How does he do it? There are 3 choices. A, he gouges his eyes with his mother's brooches. B, he pokes his eyes out with his father's spear. C, he anoints his eyelids with nectar, inviting birds to peck him to... Marjorie, I'm reading the question as it is. I can't do anything about it. Inviting the birds to peck him to blindness. And judges, you have to tell me in my ear which is the correct answer, please. Thank you. What's the answer, Chris Tabb?
Well, that just ruined my Paula Deen fantasy, but... I'm going to go with
his mother's brooches, his
I'm
father's
going with
spear,
A, his
or
mother's brooch.
Is that right, judges, or not? I don't have the answer here. You got it right.
Look,
yeah, it's right.
Out.
How did you? Oh, you know, because you're a classical kind of guy, right? Exactly.
Is that, that's how he did it.
Yeah.
How do you do it?
He didn't know, but
brooch?
I took his class. But I was in the back; he couldn't
how
see
do you
me.
Do that with brooches.
He unpins her tunic, her gown,
yeah,
and takes it and
ah.
That's horrible.
How did he not know he was? It was his mother he was married to, please.
That's a great question, Marjorie.
She looked like
Didn't
Paula Deen.
Recognize I mean, her?
Well, he grew up, he didn't grow up with her.
Okay.
He was adopted when he was 3 days old and lived for 20 years with different parents.
Mm. Oh, okay. So he married an older woman, obviously.
He married an older woman. He might have had the foresight.
Sounds
to
like
that.
They live in the projects. That is an amazing, amazing story repeated down through history.
This is almost over, thankfully. Now, Steve, Marjorie, ask Steve the next question. It's got to be fairly
At
rapidly,
At least it wasn't
please.
The nectar. Pecking his
yes,
eyes.
No, that would be the worst
That
choice.
Would be awful. Okay. Yeah. Okay, Steve. Tom Hanks is responsible for backing My Big Fat Greek Wedding. How did he get exposed to its prototype? A. His son was in college in the college production of the musical My Big Fat Greek Wedding. B. It was a one-woman show which his wife dragged him to. Or C. While filming You've Got Mail, Hanks saw a rough cut at the NYU Student Film Fest.
Okay, Steve.
A.
That would be wrong.
It is incorrect. I'm sorry, Steve. Do you have
I'll
any
make
idea?
The noise.
That's very good.
Very
Krista.
Good. Do you have any idea over there, Chris?
I'm going with he saw the play at the he dropped in. He dropped into the which one was it? He dropped into the New York City Playhouse. He dropped into NYU.
No. His wife.
But his wife dragged him to NYU, which is what I was going to
okay,
say.
Now here it is.
You guys cut me off.
Here's
Rita
the last
Wilson
question.
Dragged him. Jeez. She's Greek.
Here's what we're going to do. We're going to, even though you're up a little bit because you've misbehaved a little, if you get this right, you win. If you get this wrong, you lose. How about that? We're just going to leave it at that.
Do I get a chance at his question?
You do have a chance. Well, if he gets it wrong, you have a chance. Yeah,
right.
Okay, here it is.
Jesus.
That was Steve Esposito barging into the discussion.
The tragedy
here it is.
Versus the comedy.
Right, that's the theme today.
Tragic
Thank
comedy.
You.
Book up.
Here's your question, Chris Tabb. Over the centuries, artists have been repurposing Greek tragedies. Which among these three is a real adaptation? A. The 1950s sci-fi film Oedipus T-Rex is an adaptation of Sophocles' Oedipus Rex. B. Mommy Medea is a musical spoof on Euripides' tragedy, Medea. Or C. Sophocles' Antigone was made into a comic book. Which of the three is a real adaptation, Chris Tabb?
I'm going with B.
You are going with B, and you are wrong. Now, here's the situation. Steve Esposito, a professor of associate. You're an associate. What are you?
Associate professor.
Thank you. Associate professor of classical studies, BU. If you get this right, and there are only two choices left, you are the winner of the whole Friday news quiz. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Amazingly,
and does that come with money?
Question.
It comes with something that we'll discuss after the
get
show.
Get a mug. Jim will give you his mug.
Which was the real adaptation? Is it the 1950s sci-fi film Oedipus T-Rex, or is it Sophocles' Antigone, which was made into a comic book? What's the answer?
A.
Chris Tabb, you are the champion of this week's Friday News Quiz. Congratulations. It is unbelievable, isn't it?
Can I get some
it's
love?
It's made into a comic book. That's great.
Isn't that great?
Gubba, GBH.
Esposito from BU, it was a pleasure to meet you. Thank you so much for
Likewise,
coming.
Thanks,
good luck with your teaching.
I hope you had fun.
I did have fun.
Good.
A lot of fun.
I hope you had fun, Chris.
I had a blast.
Good.
Can I give a shout out to my friends at the American Heart and Stroke Association
Absolutely.
Who do so much great work around the world?
That's wonderful.
That's terrific. That's a very nice thing. And if you want to check out Chris Tabb, who's not only a very funny guy, but actually a very decent soul, too. Tomorrow night, Saturday, May 25th, Buzzards Bay Play Productions. Get it right, Jim. BuzzardsPlayProductions.com. It's in Wareham. Doors open at 8 o'clock. Show starts at 9 o'clock. We're done for this wonderful Memorial Day weekend. I want to thank you for listening to another edition of Boston Public Radio.
Go
you
Bruins.
Can find us on the web. That's exactly right. At wgbhnews.org/BPR. You can tweet us at BOS, short for Boston, BOS Public Radio, or follow me at Jim Browdy or Marjorie at Marjorie Egan. Have a wonderful Memorial Day, Marjorie.
You too, Jim.
And happy Memorial Day to you all. Thanks so much for spending the week with us, and we'll see you next week. Bye.
Good night.